Welcome to Offscreen Babble with Sade and Kyle, where we talk about TV shows and movies we've seen recently. Today is Episode 59, Avengers Endgame and Game of Thrones Season 8, Episode 3, The Battle of Winterfell.
And if you're a returning listener, please make sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, and also make sure to subscribe.
And make sure to check out our show notes where you can see what we talk about at what time, so you can skip ahead and avoid spoilers.
All right, so we are reviewing Avengers Endgame. Kyle is not here on this review, but I have a very special guest, M from Verbal Diorama. Hello.
Hi.
We have so much to say about this film. This is very exciting. I'm so happy to have you on.
I'm so happy to be on.
Yeah, this is going to be, I feel like bubbly right now. So like,
yeah, I feel like that. I feel like super excited and super nervous. And yeah, bubbly is a great way to describe how I'm feeling too.
Yeah.
So there's just so much going on right
there's
now.
There's so much. Okay. So what I'm going to do is go through some just basic information of Endgame. We can do a non-spoiler review in case somebody is listening to this and is like, huh, Avengers Endgame, what's that? I can't imagine. I can't imagine what that is, but like, we're going to do a very quick non-spoiler review of this and then get into spoilers. In case you're worried about getting spoiled, make sure to look at the show notes so you can see when we start. But in case someone is completely unfamiliar with Avengers Endgame, I'm going to read the IMDb synopsis. All right. After the devastating events of Avengers Infinity War, which, by the way, this is going to imply spoilers for previous films, so get ready for that, okay? The universe is in ruins. With the help of remaining allies, the Avengers assemble once more in order to undo Thanos' actions and restore order to the universe. So that's the IMDb synopsis. This film is directed by Anthony and Joe Russo, the Russo brothers. They have directed other MCU films like Captain America Winter Soldier, Captain America Civil War, and Infinity War. I think they're best known before they got involved with MCU as being like television directors, which I think will be relevant in our conversation later when we get into spoilers about how some of these films are viewed. This was written by Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely, who they wrote Captain America First Avenger, Thor Dark Lord, Captain America Winter Soldier, Guardians of the Galaxy, Captain America Civil War, and Infinity War. So yeah, kind of the same people involved in some of the previous Marvel films. Just to go right into it, what did you think about this film?
It's really difficult to talk about this film without going too much into spoilers, but what I will say is when I left the cinema, firstly, I was incredibly hot because the air conditioning broke in our cinema.
No.
So I had to sit through this film for 3 hours in a packed cinema screening, mm-hmm. which was quite a small screen as well, like quite a small room, with zero air conditioning. So it was uncomfortable,
yeah,
let me
yeah.
tell you. But obviously, I mean, leaving was just so many emotions. Let's just say when the film finished, I definitely had tears streaming down my face.
Yeah.
Just because of all of the emotion mm-hmm. that this film kind of it brings up. So, yeah, I was definitely feeling emotional. But also just so happy with what they'd done and mm. how they'd done it and how they brought all of this kind of franchise together in like one massive sort of end movie. I mean, it was absolutely phenomenal what they did. And I do have some minor issues with it, which obviously we'll talk about a bit later, but super minor in you know, compared to the grand scheme of what this movie actually achieved.
Mm-hmm.
It honestly incredible, amazing. You know, I absolutely loved it. I really did. It's just, I can't believe that what these guys have achieved.
Yeah,
you know, throughout the whole of the MCU, through you know, obviously, like you mentioned, the two Captain America movies, mm-hmm. And the two Infinity War movies. I mean, the work that they do, considering that they weren't really movie directors.
Exactly,
you know, they were
that they
directors.
Were TV directors. Yeah, I think what you're saying, like, wow. Yeah, that's crazy to go. What I would say is that, like, you know, yes, this is a tremendous accomplishment, because this is the 22nd MCU film. This has been, what, 11 years or 10 years in the making. There's so much going into this one movie. And so when I was, like, watching the movie, and after I watched it, I was thinking about it, I was like, how am I going to review this film? Because it's not like it's hard to review it as an individual film, because it's part yeah. of the MCU. It's part of all these other films. And because of that, I was like, well, am I reviewing the film, or am I reviewing the experience? Like, the overall, like, decade-plus experience of watching these films. And I think I came to the conclusion that, yeah, it's not going to be easy to review this film just as a film as much as it is an experience. And I think overall, I have some nitpicky things here and there. But overall, I was very satisfied with how it ended and how we came to Endgame. And, like, I hope once we get into spoilers, nobody thinks I'm being, like, overly nitpicky. But I think the critiques I have come from a construction of the film itself, like, maybe looking at it as just a film. But
yeah.
But then when I take a step back, I'm like, okay, but I understand, because, you know, there were 21 other films. We only have one film. Like, you know, like, that's kind of my explanation for it. So for me, I enjoyed it. I had some issues here and there, specifically with, like, character development that I think we could get into in spoilers, but, like, some things I didn't feel like they addressed throughout all of the MCU films. But yeah, I really enjoyed it as well. I found it very satisfying. I teared up. I didn't cry, but I definitely heard people in my audience sniffling. So, yeah. Like, I could tell that it was very emotional for a lot of people. In case anybody is curious, we're recording this on Sunday, so the box office numbers are out. I don't normally talk about the box office, but because we record too early. But this film, they just released that the film made, okay, hold on, let me read this, $859 million internationally, $350 domestically, which means their global is $1.209 billion just in its opening weekend.
Which is phenomenal. Like,
yeah, which is insane. So, I think that is a good point. Like, obviously, it's making tons of money. And I think there aren't a lot of things currently besides this and maybe Game of Thrones where large numbers of people are watching it all at the same time and we can have a conversation about it. So, like, that is a nice feeling. We don't, like, media now in 2019 is very, like, at your own pacing. Maybe I watch this movie and you'll see it in 3 months or whatever. But it's nice to be part of this experience that, you know, that was, like I mentioned before, 10 plus years in the making. And now it's, like, so many people saw this movie because it made over $1 billion worldwide, which is, again, really crazy.
It's super crazy, but also, you know, just the anticipation for this movie. I've never experienced such levels of anticipation for, you know, okay, maybe The Force Awakens perhaps had this sort of a similar level. But I mean, even, you know, when people were talking about, like, spoilers and stuff before the film had ever come out, and there was, you know, people on the internet trying to post spoilers because they'd obviously heard stuff. Mm-hmm. And everyone kind of rallied around and was like, you know, don't post spoilers, you know, don't be that person, because, you know, everyone wants to be surprised and amazed by this movie, you know, when they see it.
Yeah.
You know, and it turns out the majority of people went to see it opening weekend. So, you know, I think that this is the kind of unprecedented levels of fandom, I guess, that, it, you know, everyone's kind of coming together. And like you say, it's become more of an event than a movie, that people, similarly to Game of Thrones, because Game of Thrones is very much that sort of, oh, you watch it on, you know, a Sunday. Obviously, you guys get it on Sunday.
Yeah.
We don't get it until 2 a.m. Monday morning.
Oh,
so,
man.
You know, it's usually something that over here, you know, they kind of air it like a simulcast, and then they air it for real at 9 p.m. on the Monday night. So it's more of a Tuesday thing that people are like, oh, did you see Game of Thrones? And but yeah, it's almost like it's event media now. That's the thing, not just film or TV. It's a genuine, like, it brings people together in a way that just didn't happen before. You know, when, you know, in the 80s or 90s, you went to a film, you enjoyed it, and you maybe told a friend. But now it's like it actually brings people together, and that's amazing in itself.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly. And it's an like you said, it's an experience, definitely. I would say for me, if I had to give this film a rating, in case somebody's like, I just want to know what you think about the film overall, obviously we're gushing about it. I would say specifically, I would give it a 4 out of 5. I'm not a person who's afraid to give 5 out of 5s. But I think that my only real concern was, like, some of the character development just kind of irked me, and I couldn't give it like 100% or a 5 out of 5. But I mean, overall, the experience of seeing this film and just watching, I've seen all 22 films now, because I actually missed Ant-Man and the Wasp when it came out, but I watched it a few days ago before I saw this film, which I'm glad I did, because again,
Yeah, it's very pertinent.
Again, this film, I could see someone being like, huh, there's a lot of hype over this. I guess I'll see it. Not seeing any other previous Marvel film and leaving being like, what's all the, why is this such a big movie? And I really think it's a movie that you have to experience, if not all 21 films that come before it, at least, like, I don't know, 18 of the films. Like, it's a large number of the movies, so you might as well just see all of them. And I'm sure that's very difficult if you are only now saying, like, huh, I want to dabble into this Marvel world. What's going on? Because you have to go back all the way to, like, you know, 2008. But I think it's worth it, and it pays off in this film. Like I mentioned before, I think it's very satisfying for people who have seen these films, who have been invested in the storyline. As the film is constructed, I do think there are some shortcuts taken that I'm excusing in this film, but I wouldn't excuse in a different type of film, if that makes sense. But yeah, what would you rate this film?
Well, I too am not afraid to give 5 stars.
Mm-hmm.
And I, like I mentioned, I do have problems with this film. And the way that I kind of rate films is I guess I kind of do rate films more emotionally,
mm-hmm,
rather than, oh, that's an excellent example of good filmmaking, mm-hmm, shall we say. So I actually would consider this personally for me a 5-star film. That's kind of regardless of the issues that I have,
mm-hmm,
just purely because of you know, what it is and what it achieves. And I guess that kind of comes back to what you said before about, you know, it's sort of more kind of rating the experience than the movie.
Yeah.
But I think that the movie does kind of warrant it as well, sort of regardless of its faults.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's very difficult to have a perfect movie.
Absolutely. Even films that I've given 5 out of 5, I like, it's very rare where I would say, like, absolutely no issues with it. Perfect. You know, like, there's still something here and there.
Yeah. But for me, this was pretty much perfect for what I expected it to be. And so, you know, I've always kind of been very vocal in the past about my love for the original Avengers movie, and I think, you know, comparably, they're worlds apart now.
Mm-hmm.
And then you kind of like, well, how can you say this is a 5-star movie and that's a 5-star movie?
Sure.
And it's, I guess for me, it's how did that movie make me feel? Like, seeing those original Avengers come together, was, at the time, that is like, that's the pinnacle. Nothing can beat that. And now, you know, obviously that was 2012. This is 2019.
Yeah.
And now that's the same feeling that I have with this movie. So to me, it makes sense. To others, might not make sense, but
sure,
it makes sense. So
before we get into spoilers, I wanted to mention real quickly, There has been a lot of conversation about the film being 3 hours and 1 minute runtime. On our show, sometimes I'll say, like, is this runtime appropriate? Like, I have always been like, things don't need to be more than 90 minutes, or a TV show doesn't always need to be an hour, blah, blah, blah. But there are some cases where it's like, no, this is like, I understand. I definitely think I'm not mad at this film being 3 hours and whatever. Like, I couldn't really think of things that I would take out to make it shorter. I actually, if I can complain, it was that I wanted more of certain things, which would obviously make the film longer. But like, yeah. I definitely didn't have an issue. I think a lot of people were nervous about it being 3 hours because they're like, when am I going to go to the bathroom or whatever? But like, I don't think there's any problem with it being 3 hours. Did you have an issue with the runtime at all?
To be honest, I was quite strategic before I went to the cinema because I'm one of these people, I like to drink a lot of water. So obviously there's something that happens when you drink a lot of water sort of during the day. So I kind of strike quite strategic during the day, like with, oh, when am I going to have that glass of water? So I kind of felt like I was in quite a good place once, because I didn't get in to see the movie till 8 p.m. So I thought it, you know, it didn't feel like 3 hours.
I didn't feel the 3 hours. You're right.
Yeah, it felt like it to me. It felt like it was well paced. It never felt like it was overly long. Mm-hmm. And it felt the right sort of length, like you said, for everything it had to include. And in many ways, it probably could have been longer to give those characters something extra that maybe they needed. And to be honest, I'm expecting there to be deleted scenes, and I'd be interested to see those deleted scenes and see what they actually took out. Because I, in my head, I'm thinking that maybe the issues that I have with certain things in the film, perhaps there are deleted scenes for them.
Yeah.
Which to me would kind of, it wouldn't make it any better, but at least I'd think, well, at least I'd feel that they'd actually thought about it, maybe.
Yeah.
And it was obviously a timing thing.
This is the whole thing that I want to talk about once we get into spoilers, too, because part of me kind of feels like if they had a master, like, idea or plan regarding, like, how they're going to end at Endgame, I think they would have given more attention to certain things earlier in different films. But then it kind of, in some things, they were like, oh, well, we have to wrap it up. But with that being said, I'm not mad at how long, and if anything, like I said already, I would just want more things. It's a weird conflicting thing, because I'm always so like, I don't want things to be too long. But like, in this case, I'm like, well, I wanted more of like specific things. So anyway, let's get into spoilers. Before we do, if you are a person who's like, okay, should I see this film? I think you and I are both saying absolutely. However, you definitely, it's more satisfying if you are a person who has seen the previous films. Like, it's definitely not a standalone film. It's referencing the previous films that have come before it. And that is 21 other films. So like, you, I would say maybe just like, start dabbling into those films, specifically like the big ones like Iron Man and The Avengers and Civil War. Like, all those films are really crucial. But even like something like I mentioned, Ant-Man and the Wasp, I didn't see it last year until a few days ago. And I'm very glad I saw it, because it was important in this film. So, we recommend it. And now we're going to get into spoilers.
Okay, yes.
All right. So spoilers for this film. I think the best way for us to do this, because in case anyone's curious, we both took so many notes. We have a lot to discuss. So I think the best way for us to do this is to try to walk through the film as it happened, but then we can go on our side tangents. And one thing that I really do want to do is talk about each character, or at least each main character, as we're going through it. So let's start at the very beginning of this film. Very interesting. They didn't really do like an intro. They start right with Hawkeye, who we did not see in Infinity War. Quickly, what are your feelings on Hawkeye as a character in the MCU?
Well, I mean, he doesn't really have a great deal to do, does he?
Just generally. I agree.
I mean, we first meet him in Thor. He has like a very brief cameo when Thor is running around the where S.H.I.E.L.D. around Mjolnir when it's kind of in the ground and there's this big shield facility. And Hawkeye is basically the guy who's on the roof, and he's basically all to Coulson, can I shoot him? And Coulson's like, no. Mm-hmm. And that's that. And that's kind of it for that. And then, obviously in the first Avengers movie, he doesn't get to do very much because he becomes Loki's little servant. It's not really until we see him again in the next Avengers movie in Age of Ultron, where we realize that he has a family.
Yeah.
A hidden family.
I thought that was very nice for his character, because especially at that point I was like, okay, Hawkeye, like, what's your deal? Like, what are we doing here? And then, like, when we saw his family, I was like, oh, this is a nice trait. Like, we don't see him very often, and that's maybe because he's with his family taking care of them.
And it's also quite interesting as well, because when you think of superheroes in general, sort of in this universe, you know, their job is to protect humans, you know, it's mm-hmm. to protect the world, the universe. And you kind of just see them in their job as being an Avenger or whatever. And it's quite feasible that these people could actually have their own lives, with their own problems and, you know, mundane things like paying bills and all of that. And that's the sort of side of superhero-dom that's not really seen, but it is kind of for him. Basically, Joss Whedon, who directed that movie, was kind of, I think he tried to bring Hawkeye in because I don't think Jeremy Renner was particularly happy that he was essentially a zombie for the previous movie. So wanted to, you know, give him a bit more to do. And I actually quite like the idea that he has this secret family.
Yeah.
And that, you know, so he has a wife, and at that point he has two children and his wife is pregnant. And
I forgot about that.
Yeah. And then obviously you see at the start of this movie that the son that she gave birth to at the end of Age of Ultron is now, you know, a little boy. I quite like that. I actually, because I was reading up on a bit of trivia about the movie, and I don't know if it was the same, I don't think it was the same actress before, but the actress who plays Clint's daughter, so obviously you see him teach her how to use a bow and arrow.
Yes.
That's actually one of the director's daughters.
Oh, okay. One of the Russo brothers.
So, yeah. Okay. Yeah, which was quite, because I think they've got quite a few family members who are making little cameos in this movie.
Because there's another scene, again, already I'm breaking my rule, I'm jumping to another scene, but there's another scene with kids wanting to take a picture with Hulk. And all three of these kids looked very similar. Like, they look like they are really related. And I was like, is this somebody's kid who's on, or somebody's kids who are on set? Because they looked like the same. They looked like they came from the same person.
Yeah. They did look like siblings.
Yeah.
To be honest, now I'm thinking of it, I'm thinking maybe they were the other kids that. I'm going to. Let's consider that canon.
Yeah,
they definitely look like siblings, children.
Yes.
So they must be someone's kids.
Yeah, probably. But so to go back to the beginning, we see Hawkeye, and I, like you were mentioning, I think the MCU has not necessarily given him a lot to do, but I really do like when they developed his character to show, like, he is a family man. Like, here's his, I mean, like, we didn't see it at the beginning, but now here it is. And when we start the film, we as the audience know, he is not going to know what's going to happen because he's not fighting with them. I don't remember why he has an ankle bracelet. I'm guessing he's, like, on house arrest because of what happened.
Yeah. So it's after the events of Civil War.
Yes.
So obviously Ant-Man was on house arrest.
Yeah.
And I think that is kind of a little throwaway comment, I think. I can't remember in which movie, but after Civil War, Ant-Man and Hawkeye, because they've both got families, mm-hmm. instead of... So they're basically given sort of house arrest, and that's why they're not in... Which movie is it that they're not in?
Well,
and
it's, Hawkeye isn't in Infinity War.
It might have been
War.
Infinity War,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't think Ant-Man is either.
So I think that's the explanation, is that... And that's why he's got because it zooms in on his ankle.
Yeah, it zooms in on his ankle. And I was like, oh, okay, that's a good way of referencing the fact that we haven't seen him in a minute. So, yeah, of course, we see the moment of the snap, and he has no idea. They're all outside. I thought that was actually shot very well because it was a big open field. It is kind of terrifying because it's like, you know, it's a sunny day. Everything's great. There's tons of noise because everybody's talking and playing and doing stuff. And then it goes silent and everyone turns into dust. But he doesn't actually see them really turn into dust because he's like preoccupied with his daughter. He turns around. She's gone. And then his wife is gone. His kids are gone. Yeah, it was very, it was like a horror film, basically, like that moment.
Yeah. It did feel very reminiscent to a horror film. And I think what I really liked about it was the fact that you didn't see anyone actually turn to dust. It was literally, he turned around and his daughter wasn't there. And he was like, well, where is she?
Yeah.
And then he turned around again and his wife and sons had vanished out of this field. And it's like, it's really great imagery because in a massive field like that, it's not like they could have run off. It's so frightening.
Yeah.
Because if you imagine as a parent.
Exactly, that too. You're like, where are my kids?
Just vanishing in plain sight. Like, how absolutely mortifying. And, I'm not even a parent. And that just fills me with dread.
Yeah, like, the same. Fact that
someone could just disappear. And then you realise that pretty much everyone in the world experienced that. Every single man, woman and child.
Yes, yes. And that is something that is interesting that they delve into longer than I thought they would. We go into the movie, we have a credit scene, and then we see Iron Man. And like when we left off with him, I mean, I forget what planet they were on, but he's basically left with Nebula, right? And
yeah.
We see, I mean, there's some comical moments where it's like these two pair together aren't like Nebula is so stern and serious and does not get humor. And Iron Man, even in a moment that's kind of like sad, he's still always going to be a little bit funny. And so like they're playing, I don't know what that's called, but that kind of like paper football game. And yeah. It's funny to see her just be like, she's not humorous, but it's just funny to see her like win and then like be like, I like that. Like, it's just like her, I guess the feeling of winning is something she's not used to, but she's so serious about it. But then we cut to him in a serious moment where he is leaving a message hoping that Pepper Potts could see it someday, but doesn't even know if she's alive, and is basically saying like, I'm running out of air or oxygen and we're probably gonna die. And he's just like sad, just like, this is the end for me. At that point, like with a lot of films, I'm kind of like, okay, I know where this is going. At that point, I was like, how the hell is this gonna, like, how is he gonna get out of this? Like,
yeah,
I was very like, okay, like, I have no idea what's gonna happen, who could possibly save him, right? I think also get cut into. Who is left? It's Black Widow. We see Captain America. Rhodes. I always forget his name. Rhodes, played by Don Cheadle. Oh, Thor is there too. And so they're all in like HQ or Avengers HQ. And what we find out is that Captain Marvel is actually the person who saves them, is able to move their ship that they're on and bring it to Avengers HQ. Because she was called by Nick Fury in Infinity War at the end. And so she comes in and they're kind of like, who are you? I really liked, I think it's more Rhodes, who's like, where the hell have you been this entire time? Like, you know, like, who are you? And Captain Marvel is very much like, okay, so what's going on? Okay, Thanos. All right, I'll take care of it. And they're like, wait a minute. We all work together. It's just like, yeah. Anyway, I got this. I really enjoyed that. What I will say is that for Captain Marvel specifically, she is in this beginning portion. And then we don't see her for majority of the film. And then we obviously see her at the end. For me, I was kind of like, oh, I'm a little disappointed because I really thought she was going to be in the film throughout. And they make a reference, or I guess she makes a reference saying, like, well, I have to take care of the universe because the universe doesn't have you guys. There's no Avengers in the universe, so I have to do it. I wish the film, this would add to the length of the film. I wish we saw what she was doing in the universe, like outside of Earth, just for maybe a minute or two, because it would have felt more satisfying, at least for me, I guess, to know, like, okay, that's why Captain Marvel isn't here right now. She's doing, she's taking care of this thing. Here's an example of it. I got it. Instead of just being, we're just told it, and I wish we saw it for at least a minute.
I think her inclusion in this film is interesting, because obviously in the final end credit scene of Infinity War, as Nick Fury is himself turning to dust, he gets out the pager and, you know, he pages her. And obviously, I'm assuming that most people listening have seen Captain Marvel. So they obviously know what. Well, I hope so.
I know. As you said that, I was like, that's another thing I need to put in the show notes. By the way, this is going to be spoilers for every other film. Yeah.
And I mean, I've always kind of thought that because Captain Marvel is set in the past, it's set in the 90s. So it's not really a film that I think you specifically need to know. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to watch this film. But her inclusion in this film was obviously teased in Infinity War. So I think a lot of people in were maybe of the assumption that, oh, well, Thanos is screwed because Captain Marvel's so powerful. She's going to come in. She's going to kill him. And then that's the end of the film. And then it's like, oh, well, this film's 3 hours long. And, oh, but Captain Marvel's going to come in and she's going to finish it.
Yeah.
So what's going on with this length? I think that was maybe a little bit of two things. I think that obviously the filmmakers wanted to highlight the fact that this new character was in. But when they shot this film, Brie Larson hadn't even shot her own movie.
Mm-hmm.
So this was her first time really playing the character. So maybe kind of Marvel Studios were maybe hedging their bets a little bit, although Captain Marvel has been a resounding success and, you know, has hit $1 billion and has done phenomenally. Obviously, when they were filming this, Brie Larson as Captain Marvel wasn't the mega superstar that she's kind of become now.
Yeah.
So I think they were maybe hedging their bets a little bit with her. Not that they thought that her film would flop, because I don't think it ever really stood a chance of flopping, because this is a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
They don't flop. But I do think that they realised how powerful she was going to be, but also that they didn't just want her to come in and save the day, because this was always ever going to be a movie about Steve and Tony.
Yes, that's a good point, because when I think about who is this film about, right? Like, who are the main characters? I mean, truly, I agree. The main characters are Tony Stark and Captain America. Like, that, I agree completely. And I do agree as well, like, it wouldn't be as interesting if there's only one character who came in and saved the day. So, like, I'm not mad necessarily that she had to, that she wasn't in all of the film, but I guess the only thing that I could say that I found dissatisfying is that I just wish we had a glimpse. Well, this film cuts to several characters in different areas throughout the film, and I wish we just cut to her once to see what she was doing. I guess I just would have found that more satisfying. But anyway, so the film, so she goes off, I guess. She's like, I got shit to do. And we have Tony Stark and Captain America talk. And it's very interesting. First off, I don't know if this was like a special effect or not, but, or if this is what Robert Downey Jr. really looks like. But he looks extremely frail. Like, they show a specific scene of him, like, with a robe on, but his chest is open. And he looks very thin, and I don't know if that's supposed to be, like, well, he's been up there for, like, weeks with nothing, and now he's...
Yeah, I think it's just kind of muscle wastage.
Exactly. And, so, like, if that's, like, a special effect, that was really good, because I found that very alarming. I was like, oh, wow, he almost died. Like, he looks like he is... about to
but
die.
But that's the thing. He looks so genuinely ill.
Yeah.
You know, because obviously he mentions that they're running out of food and that the oxygen's... So, you know, he's got very little food. He's being starved of oxygen. Mm. His muscles are wasting. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that when... Because when generally, you know, astronauts go into space, they have like quite a rigorous training regime while they're in space, because they have to, because otherwise their you know, their muscles will just, you know, degenerate to such a degree that they won't be able to you know, walk on re-entry. And I think that although that it's clear that the ship has some sort of artificial gravity, it's, I think it is still genuinely a thing when you're in that sort of environment that, you know, any, because obviously he's a muscular guy, just generally, as I am. So
That's why I was very surprised when I saw him. I was like, oh my gosh, like, yeah, he is frail because he's been up there this whole time. The thing that's interesting is when we see that moment, we also see a confrontation between him and Captain America. And it's very tense. I thought they did a very good job of showing their differences and kind of Tony's resentment towards Captain America, which this, I think, all stems from Civil War. Obviously, it's a huge thing that's happening right now. We need to take care of Thanos and what happened. But I could see why Tony would be like, yeah, if you had listened to me to begin with, we wouldn't be here. And he's just like super upset about it. So and Captain America is like, you know, you could see in his face that he's like, I hear you. like, I get it. I understand why you're mad. We need to keep moving so we can fix it. But obviously, that's not working at that very moment. The other thing that's interesting is that Tony Stark, luckily, Pepper Potts is there. So it's like the person he loves is there. And he
survived,
Yeah, so he's kind of like, okay, well, that sucks that this happened. I didn't want it to happen. I'm mad that it happened. But also, the love of my life is here, so I'm gonna do me, you know, like, I mean, eventually he's kind of, they nurse him back to health, but eventually he kind of leaves and just is like, I'm gonna focus on my stuff while you guys do whatever you want to do. Mm. And what they do, I guess it's, I believe it's Rhodes, Black Widow, Captain America, and Thor go look for him because Nebula's like, oh, he's gonna be at the garden, I know where he is. When they cut to Thanos, this might just be like me, when we see Thanos and he's wearing that t-shirt, I was like, it was jarring to me because I couldn't imagine Thanos in like casual clothing. I only can think of Thanos wearing his armor. So when he's wearing like, I don't know, like a regular t-shirt, I was like, what is happening? And he's like cooking.
Yeah, like, who is this?
Yeah, it's just like he's just living like a domestic life. He's like cooking in the kitchen, whatever. I thought that I chuckled a bit, obviously, just because I was like, wait a minute, what's happening? But yeah, so they confront him. And what I liked about this scene was that I at this point, I was like, what is going to happen? I wasn't expecting for them to reach Thanos this quickly. We're like 15 minutes into the film. Like, this is crazy. And what is established early on is that Thor has been kind of stewing in his, what he views as a mistake when he went to strike Thanos in Infinity War with his axe. He does it and it's like good, but he says something like, you should have gone for the head.
Yeah.
And it seems like ever since that happened, he has been like, he has taken the weight of everything and blames himself. And so the first thing that happens is immediately they get Thanos down and they chop off the hand, right? The gauntlet.
Yeah.
And they realize like, oh, the stones are gone. And Thanos is like, yeah, duh. You think I would just like, I liked how, I don't know why Thanos' part was making me laugh every time, but like when he's like, yeah, you think I would just keep it? Like, no, I got rid of the stones, of course.
It makes perfect sense
it
though.
Does.
Because if you just use those stones to do what you wanted and eradicate half the life in the universe, why would you then keep them?
Yeah, exactly.
What, like as a memento?
Yeah. So I thought that was like, yeah, Thanos, okay. I hear you. Like, that makes sense. You would get rid of it. And so then when they're trying to talk to him and say, like, I think maybe they're saying, where are the stones? You didn't really destroy them, blah, blah, blah. Mid-sentence, I think Thor just chops his head off. Which, again, yeah, is like, whoa. Like, that was very shocking. I was not expecting that. However, it does make sense because he is filled with rage that he, and also, you know, he's blamed himself this entire time and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So he's kind of like, well, if I get the chance, yeah, I'm going to go for that, you know, like, and I think they're kind of like, why did you do that? And he's like, whatever, he got rid of the stones, whatever, he shouldn't be alive. And he just kills him. I thought that was interesting, especially because like Nebula is seeing her father die, like right in front of her. And I think they cut to her and she's kind of like shaken by it. And everyone,
yeah, because he actually says something nice to her, because she says something like, my father's many things, but he's not a liar. And he kind of starts to say, you know, oh, thank you, daughter. And that's kind of the moment when Thor comes in with the head chop, which you can tell, you know, although he is angry and he felt like he should have done it before, he instantly regrets it because it means nothing.
Yeah.
And I was actually surprised how quickly Thor did it, and also how little it actually meant in the grand scheme of things. It means nothing. The fact that they've chopped off his head means absolutely nothing.
Yeah, it's too late.
They don't have the stones. They can't reverse it. This is it. They've done is chop a guy's head off.
Yeah,
for literally no reason. So you know, I don't think he feels remorse or anything, but I think he just feels like, well, it didn't do what I wanted it to do. It didn't make me feel how it should have made me feel.
Yeah, I think he does it thinking, oh, well, this will at least be satisfying because I get to kill him. And at the end of the day, it's just like, okay, you killed him, but nothing has changed. Everything is still bad. So yeah, that was very surprising. The other part that I found very surprising was when we do the, it says 5 years later, very slowly, like you see the word five and I'm like, okay, five what? And then it's like years. I was like, oh, okay.
You're thinking like, is it weeks?
Yeah.
Is it months? No, it's years.
It's like, oh, okay. And it's 5 years later. And we go to San Francisco where, again, this is why I'm happy I saw Ant-Man and the Wasp recently. We see the van that has, I guess, the quantum. As much as I did see this film recently, I am a little bit confused of the technology, specifically in when it comes to the quantum realm and time travel, but we could discuss that in a minute.
Okay.
But yeah, so we see the van, and I guess the hero of the film, this random rat, like gets him out of there by pure luck. And
I mean, did Doctor Strange foresee this rat?
I'm assuming yes.
Like, he must have done, because there was this one, vision that he saw out of 14 million where they won, and it must have included this rat.
Yeah.
So basically what this film is saying is that we are kind of predetermined on a path, and then literally anything could come in and change that. And it could be a wrap.
Yeah, yeah. I was just like, okay. And so we see, I believe his character is Scott Lang, Ant-Man.
Yep.
Played by Paul Rudd. And he is like, what the heck is happening? I think for him, it only felt like 5 hours or something.
Yeah.
But it's been 5 years. He slowly begins to realize, like, he sees like this monument of all the names of people who are gone. I think his name is included. And then he realizes, wait, what? And so he runs to see his daughter, who is now, again, she seems way older. Like in the previous film in Ant-Man and the Wasp, she seemed like a little girl. So I'm guessing like 5 years later, I thought she'd be like 13, but she looks like, I don't know, 17. She looks like almost an adult.
Yeah, I think in the last movie, I think she was supposed to be 10.
Okay, so maybe she just looked a little younger than what I thought her actual age was.
Yeah, because it's the same actress in Ant-Man and Ant-Man and the Wasp, but I think I think the character is either 9 or 10 in Ant-Man and the Wasp, okay. So that would make her, like, 14, 15.
Okay,
so.
If that's the case, I guess I was just expecting someone to be, like, 12 or 13 years old. And when yeah. he opens this door and it's, like, almost an adult woman, I was like, I'm sorry, who is this? Like, I was like, oh, okay, this is his daughter. And that is very jarring because, one, she thought her dad died, so that's probably a relief. Like, oh my gosh, my dad's here. But then the last time he saw her was as a little girl, like at least 5 years younger. And now it's like the reality of like, I missed out on 5 years with my daughter.
This movie really knows how to kind of punch you in the feelings.
Yeah, like you, that, it starts
with Hawkeye
to sink in.
And losing his children. And then, you know, Ant-Man, they thought he was gone and he's lost literally 5 years of his daughter's life. Like mm-hmm. it's just, it really knows how to punch you in the gut, and I feel his pain, like seeing his daughter and his daughter seeing him, and it's like, you know, I genuinely kind of shed a little bit of a tear at that point, because the first of many 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 tears.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, how do you explain like where you've been, and how does she explain what's happened? And
yeah,
I mean, it's just, I don't have words.
Yeah, no, it's a lot. Words. And so what I appreciate about the film, so at the beginning, I would say for me, there were some jokes that like just didn't land. I don't really remember specifically. But when Ant-Man arrives, the jokes that start happening landed more for me. And maybe that's just because I like Paul Rudd a lot. But I liked his presence once he goes to Avengers HQ. And he's like, hey, remember me? I was in Germany with you guys. Like, he's like trying to introduce yeah. himself again. We also see another character who I was glad to see a little bit more of, Black Widow. So for me, I haven't hated Black Widow. I haven't liked her. I felt like they didn't really do much with her in the MCU. I felt like they started right at the beginning when she first appeared, but then they kind of didn't really do anything with her going forward. And so what I liked about this movie was that we got to see her take charge. She is now, I guess, leading what is left of the Avengers. People,
she's basically doing everything.
Yeah, people are reporting to her. You could see that this is a little stressful for her. You could see that she maybe feels a little hopeless. But, like, I just thought that was nice because it was something we got out of her character, because we haven't really gotten much out of her character throughout these other films. Also, Captain America, during this time, I guess he is doing, like, grief counseling for people who are who experience loss, obviously, once the snap happened. And so it doesn't really seem like he's as in touch with, like, Scarlett Johansson's character. Obviously, he comes in to check on her, but he doesn't really seem to be leading it like he used to.
Yeah, I kind of felt a little bit like, obviously, 5 years has passed. And the kind of whole point of Steve in these grief counselling meetings that he was doing was obviously, you know, to help people move on and to, you know, help people figure out their future. And because these, you know, everyone's experienced such immeasurable loss.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
how do you carry on if your child isn't around, or your partner or your parents or whoever? How do you cope with this immeasurable sense of loss? And so I feel like he's doing something that he really wants to do. He's always been a very selfless person, and that's basically who Steve has always been. And I've kind of find, just quickly going back to Iron Man, that in that respect, like, Tony has essentially over the course of these films kind of been a bit selfish in most senses, whereas Steve has always been selfless and giving, you know, and basically doing whatever he can. And in many ways, I kind of felt that at least Steve is kind of having a life. I know it's not the life that he would want or that he envisaged, but he's having a life out of the Avengers. But Natasha isn't.
Yeah,
she's still kind of so focused on this family that she's built for herself. And she could, if she really wanted to, she could have a life. You know,
yeah.
And she chooses not to. She chooses to kind of carry on. And And in many ways, you know, I think that's just kind of her character. But I do feel like you've just said that the movies have never done a particularly great job with her. Mm-hmm. And especially Age of Ultron, which I think is super problematic in many different ways. Mm-hmm. But I kind of feel like she's always kind of had this token woman thing.
Yeah, this is
which
something...
doesn't really apply to her anymore because there is more than one woman now.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it grated me a little bit. Like, oh, what's Stephen doing? Oh, well, he's, you know, helping people recover. You know, he's helping counsel these people. And what's Natasha doing? Oh, well, she's sitting behind a desk and she's basically the new Fury. And it's like, well, where's her life? Like,
yeah, I want
her to get more from this.
Yeah, it did show kind of like a sad existence for her a bit. Yeah. But also, like, she is trying to be like, well, I'm not giving up. I'm going to keep...
Which is admirable, I guess.
Yeah, so, like, I could see multiple sides with her character where it's like, okay, maybe she isn't living her life to the fullest. As well as I could see multiple sides with Captain America because, like, yes, he's outside of the Avengers. He's trying to help people, so maybe he's having a bit more of a life, but he's still making it about helping other people and not really reflecting on himself. So, like, yeah, there's so many things going on with them. I'm trying to think what other characters... Oh, well, Tony Stark. We know... I guess we're going to get to him in a second, but he's with Pepper Potts, and he's having his life. He is truly living his life.
Yeah.
But when we see Ant-Man approach the Avengers headquarters, it looks like Black Widow and Captain America are very surprised by it. He explains the quantum realm to them, or quickly explains it. And
yeah,
they are basically like, we need to time travel. The way we can fix this is if we go back in time and get the stones.
Yeah, they kind of had this arbitrary plan, don't they? Of, well, this is, we can use this, but we need to know how we can use this.
Yes.
So we need to speak to someone who can help us.
And the only person they view who could really help is Tony Stark at first.
Yep.
And so they go to Tony's house, and again, this is me nitpicking. I know Audi is a sponsor. They really were showcasing these Audi cars, like when they come,
yeah,
when they roll up to his house, and they're just like, "This is an Audi." They are getting out of an Audi, right? And it's like, yes, I get it. Like, they have a super nice car.
They always like focus on the badge, like, don't they?
Yeah.
So the car comes, the badge is there, and it's, you almost need like a flashing neon sign that says, "This is an Audi."
Yeah, basically, or like Black Widow being like, "Oh, that Audi was so comfortable." Anyway, like she might as well have just said something like that. But anyway, so they talk to Tony, and Tony, I mean, Tony, as much as this may be like a selfish thing, I find his actions to be very relatable. He
Absolutely.
He talks yeah. about how I'm lucky. I have my wife here, and now we have a child. And not everybody can say that they have their family after the snap. So I'm not trying to mess around with anything. So don't worry about it. If you're here to try to talk me into something, it's not going to happen. And he seems very against it. He's like, okay, you want to do time travel, which they start making fun of previous like time travel films. He's like, yeah, if you want to talk to me about that type of stuff, you could just leave. Like, I'm not doing this. I don't want to miss my daughter. We also see his family life, like with his daughter. They have a very sweet relationship.
Oh, she's so adorable.
Yeah, she's very, I thought she did a really good job, this little child actress. I thought she did a good job. And I thought also they did a good job of showing like just this nice relationship between them. It seemed very sweet.
It really was. It was lovely. It was lovely to see him experience that.
Yes.
After, you know, all of those years. I suppose, you know, like I said before, he has always been a bit selfish.
Mm-hmm.
But he never seemed to be the sort of person who kind of wanted this life. But obviously the snap has made him realise, you know, there is more to this world than, you know, making loads of money and, you know, being
yeah,
Iron Man.
Yeah.
You know, I can just be a husband and a father, and I am happy with that. He is still building a suit for Pepper, you know,
yes.
So he's kind of still doing it, but kind of not, which is good, I think, for him.
Yeah. And so this is where, this is a moment where throughout the film, I was talking to my sister and she was like, did you feel like the beginning was a bit choppy? And I think what she meant by that was like, it was kind of jumping too quickly and not showing us enough stuff. And I would say, yes, there are moments where I was like, wait a minute, what? And I say all this knowing the film is 3 hours long. I'm not trying to be like, I need a 6 hour long film, you know, but I am, it is something that is a bit jarring. And so one of the things that I found a little like, what, was when he does the time travel thing or solves time travel, it seems very quick. I think the implication in the film is like, he's been working on it for some time and we as the audience are cutting into when he finally succeeds, right? But the way that it's shot, it just feels like he turned on his computer and like solved, like it felt so quick.
Yeah.
That yeah. Like I was like, wait a minute, what, like how did he just fix this? And like I think he starts dabbling into it after he sees a picture of Peter Parker. And he realizes, like, okay, I have my family, but, like, wow, look at Peter Parker. He's gone. And it starts to hit him a little bit more, the reality. So he starts messing around with it and solves it very quickly.
Yeah, but I think canonically, you know, Tony's always been the sort of person that he's always kind of described himself as the, you know, genius, billionaire, playboy, philanthropist. And, you know, the genius part has always been first because he is incredibly smart. And I think that in previous movies, he has this ability to solve things very quickly and build things very quickly. And I think it's just if we saw that time in the other movies, I think, you know, they would also be incredibly long.
Sure.
And I think the movie kind of does, I think it could have maybe shown a bit more of his workings out and his failed attempts or whatever. But I think we've kind of reached a point in the MCU with Tony Stark that we know the guy's a genius. We know
exactly.
He's going to solve it.
Yes.
And we know he's going to figure it out. So why not just get there really fast? Because
that is
there's
true.
No point like mulling over and him going, I wonder if this works.
Yes.
Oh, no, that doesn't work. Let me try something else. He's going to do it. So let's just get there and let's get there as quickly as possible. So I kind of see your point, but I also see the filmmaker's point
As you're explaining it, too, because anything that they would show us would be stuff we have seen before. Like, it's not necessarily
exactly.
Like it's going to be a new visual. Just for me sitting there, I was just like, wait a minute, what? He solved it. The other thing that I thought was very interesting was his dynamic with Pepper Potts. I've been trying to understand because when he solves it and he talks to her and he's like, I figured it out. I was expecting her to be like, what about us? What if you get it wrong? You know, like just coming up with like the counters of doing it, not necessarily saying that she doesn't want him to do it, but just acknowledging like how it could change everything and hurt them possibly. And instead her response was like, well, I guess you have to do it like very quickly. Not a lot of like back and forth or hesitation between the two of them. And at first I was kind of like, I don't think this is how this would play out. Pepper Potts has always been somebody who has been able to like keep up with Tony and they've gone back and forth and stuff. I just wasn't expecting her to be like, well, yeah. But when I thought about it a little bit more, I guess Tony's response is kind of, he's surprised, I think, a bit that she's so on board.
Yeah.
And I think he may have been bringing it up to her, hoping that she would talk him out of it.
I think so, too.
Okay.
I think if, that was my thinking, that if she said, no, think about this, think about our child, and he would have gone, yeah, I agree, I won't do it.
Yeah,
I think he was taken aback by her agreeing that he should do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of maybe made him think, well, actually, maybe I should do it.
Yeah.
You know, a bit of reverse psychology maybe going on from, you know, Pepper's point of view. But and also, you know, she's been married to the guy for a little while. She's been with him pretty much since, well, she's known him since, you know, 2008.
Yeah.
So they've kind of been a bit on and off. But on the whole, she's always kind of fought against him a little bit and disagreed with him. But maybe after being married to the guy, maybe she's just probably used to agreeing. I don't know,
that could be it. And obviously for the sake of the film, we do need it to go like we need it to be moving. So, like, I understand not having this, like, oh, and now Pepper is mad at him and let's delve into, like, I get that. But I was a little taken aback by it at first until I thought about it a little bit more and realized, okay, yeah, like, he maybe was bringing that out there because he wanted to not do it or be talked out of it. And yeah, she didn't do that. But before, so that's what's happening with Tony. Before he decides to come on board after he solves time travel, the rest of the Avengers are trying to bring everybody together. So they try to find Bruce Banner. And it's, I believe, Black Widow, Ant-Man, and Captain America go to find Bruce Banner. And he is now, I don't know what they refer to him. I heard someone on a podcast refer to him as Smart Hulk. I don't know if that's a thing in the comics.
I think in the comics, I think he's referred to as Professor Hulk.
Professor Hulk. I think. Okay.
Yeah, because it's like, it's Bruce and the Hulk together as one. So I think he's called Professor Hulk.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, I absolutely loved this. I think, yeah. I don't know how it really works for the character canonically, because there's always been this inner conflict between Bruce and Hulk,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, in the previous movie, Hulk was refusing to even come out. So I kind of feel like, what have we missed? Like, where did this agreement come from? Like,
yeah,
because in the last movie, which was only sort of 5 years previously, like, you and the Hulk were not getting on.
Yeah, yeah.
And now you're, like, so best buds that you're integrated with each other and it's the best of both worlds. Like, I feel like we're missing
a movie or something. Yeah, this is a thing where...
To explain this.
Where, like, again, would it have been nice to have seen that? Of course. I don't think they could have done it in this film, obviously, because that would have been way too much stuff. And maybe if they had known this is where they were going to end up, they could have dabbled into it in previous films. But regardless, I was kind of like, okay, yeah, in the previous films we've seen him trying not to be Hulk. He didn't want anything to do with it, and then Hulk was taking over and he was upset, and then he had kind of maybe like PTSD and didn't want to go back into Hulk. Like, we've seen him kind of go back and forth, and then it's kind of funny where he's like very calm and he's like, yeah, you know, I was just fighting him off and I just, like, we came together and, oh gosh, I'm so embarrassed about my previous actions. Like, you know, like he's just like having these, like, really, like this in-depth conversation about his character. And again, this is another moment, maybe it's just me, seeing huge characters wear, like, casual clothing, like,
I know,
like,
that's what I was just thinking.
Like, him wearing, like, I feel like he was wearing, like, a tracksuit at one point, or, like, just, like, wearing, like, casual clothing that, like, it just...
Where do you buy that clothing from? Like, does he have it specially made?
It has to absolutely be specially made. Like, same thing with Thanos. They shop at the same store because, like, truly, like, yeah. how are they finding this clothing? And, like, that was super funny. That goes to the scene that we talked about previously where those kids come up and, like, oh, let's take a picture. And he's, like, maybe he's getting a little too into it because he's, like, yeah. Like, he's, like, taking pictures with the kids. And then the funny part that I liked was with Ant-Man being, like, oh, do you want my picture? And then the kids are, like, I don't know. And he's like, I'm Ant-Man. Yeah. And then Hulk, I think, feels bad. And he's like, yeah, he's Ant-Man. And then one of the kids is like, no. And then Ant-Man is like, that kid just verbally said no. He does not want a picture with me. Like, don't make it, like, don't pity me. It's fine. I thought that was really funny. And, like, for me, the humor really picked up every time Ant-Man was talking, for me at least.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I think that scene was just hilarious anyway.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, the way, because... Obviously, we know that Mark Ruffalo does the motion capture for Hulk.
Oh, yeah.
And he has done kind of since the Avengers. But this is, I mean, the way that, because I know they always kind of tried to make the Hulk look like Mark Ruffalo in the past. Mm-hmm. But this, I mean, it was literally like Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah, it looked, like, exactly like
green
him.
Face paint on.
Yeah.
But he was a bit bigger. And I mean, it was absolutely, I mean, it looked completely spot on. Like,
yeah,
it didn't look fake, it didn't look
everything I'm
like
seeing,
a CGI character.
Yeah, everything I'm seeing online is like Hot Hulk, sexy Hulk. Like, everyone is, like, super into Hulk yeah. right now. So, like, I mean, like, it does look like Mark Ruffalo. So, like, I get that. Oh, I guess we should mention, and we can obviously talk about individual performances and stuff, but, like, I think people gave so much credit to, oh gosh, now I'm forgetting the actor's name who plays Thanos.
Oh, Josh Brolin.
Yes, to Josh Brolin. And I think he did an amazing job as Thanos in Infinity War and in this film. But I also think Mark Ruffalo did a really good job as Hulk, because I think there's, maybe there's different acting involved when you're doing a CGI character. But I, like, believed it. I didn't just feel like, okay, this is just a big CGI thing. I believe, yeah, like, okay, yeah, this is, like, he's acting. I believe this. But yeah, so they turn to Hulk because they're like, well, we need someone to help us with this time travel stuff. And he's like, that's not really my area, but I guess I can kind of help, like, whatever. And so then they go to, I believe it's Norway, to find Thor, because he, since he chopped off the head, he's just been gone. And he has tried to bring, I guess, the Asgardians to Norway to make maybe a new community for them. And so it's like this fishing community. We see Valkyrie, and she tells them, like, yeah, he doesn't really come down unless he's getting his beer. So it's like, uh-oh, he's depressed. He's drinking a lot. We get to see him with, oh, I forget his friend's name from Ragnarok.
Korg and Meek.
Yes, okay. And so we see that they survive the snap. So it's like, oh, okay, that's nice. He has some friends.
Which I'm so happy about.
Yeah.
Because, you know, obviously we didn't know about Valkyrie, Korg and Meek. And everyone was like, where are Valkyrie, Korg and Meek?
Yeah. So
they obviously went off in a different ship, and they obviously came down to Earth, and then they built New Asgard.
Yes.
So
yes.
That's pretty cool.
And so we see, so it's like, okay, good. He's not alone. Like, so as depressed as he is, at least he has friends. And then the reveal of Thor. So Thor, now it's been 5 years. It seems like he's been drinking his depression and not taking care of himself. He's completely disheveled. He has gained weight. We see him shirtless. So we see his, like, gut. When this happened, my initial thought was, uh-oh. Because for me, I think when you make, like, fat jokes, when you put, like, a fit actor into a fat suit, I'm like, okay, yeah. What are we really gonna do? I think they did an okay job with this. There were some, like, maybe some cheap shots here and there, but, like, overall, I kind of felt like, well, he's suffering PTSD. He doesn't even want to hear the name Thanos at this point, because you could see when they mentioned Thanos, he is triggered, and it seems like something he hasn't delved into emotionally. It's a traumatic experience for him. And the way that he has dealt with this, we saw Black Widow has dealt with it by putting herself as the head of Avengers, and you know, Tony Stark has stayed with his family. Everybody's dealing with it in a different way. And he dealt with it by not taking care of himself, right? And, you know, like, he is a god superhero who was used to, like, training and, like, saving people, and now has spent the last 5 years just maybe being an alcoholic and playing video games, right? So, like, his body changing, yeah. For me, I was like, okay, that is maybe, like, what would happen realistically. And, like, they all seem concerned about him, but not because, like, oh, you're fat now. It's more of, like, we're concerned because you seem severely depressed. And, like, you seem like you are not doing well. And so I thought they did an okay job with it. There are some jokes that are at the expense of him being fat, like, just here and there. Like, someone says, like,
yeah,
you know, like, so those jokes, I was kind of like, okay, yeah, we get it. He's fat. Like, you know, like, but there are other jokes, or the comments made are kind of like, you are not emotionally stable to do this. Later on, we'll get to that, but he wants to do something. You're like, no, you can't do it, because he's obviously still emotionally not well. What did you think about Thor and the reveal of his whole appearance changing and his PTSD?
I agree on the most part about sort of how they dealt with it. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel very much that some of the jokes were maybe a little bit too on the nose. I mean, I kind of feel that they obviously wanted to subvert the trope of, you know, Thor being this, you know, godlike man with this amazing physique. And, you know, that because in the past movies, Chris Hemsworth has taken his top off a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm someone who's always been very appreciative of his physique.
Yeah.
And I mean, I like that they kind of at least trying to subvert that, that, you know, maybe Chris Hemsworth is a bit bored of having to take his top off and show his physique every single time.
Sure.
Because genuinely, he is a very great comedic actor. And I think he's proven that in Ragnarok and in other movies that, you know, not in this franchise that he's done.
Yeah.
So I kind of understand why they did it. The thing that I have an issue with is obviously the guy, as you mentioned, is definitely experiencing PTSD. He's obviously, you know, experiencing depression, alcoholism, all of these really serious kind of things that kind of don't really get dealt with.
Yeah, they kind of were like, anyway,
And I know it's supposed to be like a superhero movie. It's not there to talk about adult issues, you know, serious things like alcoholism and grief and depression and all of that. I think sometimes, a lot of the time, we forget exactly what Thor has gone through. He's experienced more loss than anyone, I think, in the whole of this universe. Mm-hmm. It's kind of used as a bit of a throwaway joke in Infinity War, where he's speaking to Rocket and he's like, well, you know, I've lost everything pretty much. So, you know, what's left for me kind of thing. And I do like the fact that they are referencing the fact that he's obviously come out of this with issues, and that has kind of manifested in the way that he looks. Because I think in many cases, when you are experiencing personal issues like that, it will affect.
Yeah.
That.
Like not to make this a whole like depression podcast, but like if you're truly going through depression, you wouldn't be like showering, or at least for some people, they like, you're so depressed, you can't take care of yourself. So like when we see him and his hair is like all matted up, he has this like super long beard, he looks like he hasn't showered, and he's not taking care of himself. Like, I definitely understand why it's like, okay, you know, this is what would happen to him. I agree. Yes, they are there's no need to tackle serious topics. However, they have now inserted it into this film by making his character like this. So, like, you kind of have to, you can't have, oh, yeah, he's alcoholic, but let's make jokes about it and not ever address... maybe he shouldn't be helping us because he has a severe problem. So, but like, you know, like, again, this is obviously us taking it to a very serious level. But if I'm being honest, that's how I felt when I was watching it. Like, you know, I kind of felt like, okay, yeah, like it is funny that he's a little disheveled. But then when you start to delve into why that is, it's dark, you know, like,
yeah, it's really dark. And the movie's the thing that's gone there. Like, you haven't assumed anything. You can see what the guy looks like and how he behaves and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's something that the movie has kind of gone to a point. But I don't want to kind of dwell on a serious topic, but the whole kind of Thor being fat, it is a bit of a constant running joke through the movie. I think even up to the point where his own mother kind of says, eat a salad.
Yeah. which
and I'm like, for that, but really though.
Yeah. For that one, I almost excused, because I'm like, well, a mom would be concerned about their adult child. So like, she's just like, huh? Okay.
Yeah.
So like almost that, I was like, okay, that's fine. But the one where I was like, guys, we get it, he's fat, is towards the end. Again, I'm jumping ahead, but we'll come back. When he's shaking Valkyrie's hand, and they insert a shot of them shaking hands, and their hands are in front of his belly.
And
it's very much like, see, he's fat. And it's like, okay, we got it. We know, we know he is fat. I do like that he didn't like lose a ton of weight at the end. Like, he's just like bigger now. Like, I mean, that was nice. But like, overall, yes, it was kind of going here and there with the fat jokes. And for me, I just think, like, whenever you do that, it's tricky territory. It's very difficult to do it. And I think they did an okay job. But yes, there were lines like eat a salad, Rhodes saying, oh, what's pumping through your veins, Cheese Whiz, showing his belly, like things like that, where I was like, okay, we don't need this. You know, like, like this is unnecessary.
You've made your point. Yeah, we know he's fat. Okay, let's kind of move on from it. But looking back over the franchise as a whole, you know, it has kind of always poked fun a little bit at those kind of things. And so I give it more of a pass than I probably would if it was another movie.
Sure, of course.
You know, constantly making jokes against, like, people who are maybe a bit on the tubby side. And, you know, I'm also glad that he didn't just kind of shed the weight. I did kind of have this vision at the end that, you know, maybe he would call on the power of Thor and the fat would just kind of get electrocuted off him or something.
Sure.
I'm really glad they didn't do that, because that would literally be ridiculous. Or would it? I don't know. He's a god, but I'm not sure. But I kind of hope that if they are going to kind of move this forward with this character, that they at least maybe go into a bit more detail or explain it a bit more. But that's not really for this movie.
Exactly. So. Yes. If this was a different film, I would definitely be a little bit harder on it. But right now I'm like, okay, that's fine. And yes, I hope in the future if this is going to be a characteristic trait of him, they treat it well. So to go back to where we are, yes, they see him, he's not well, but they bring him on. And then they also, I believe Black Widow finds Hawkeye. And Hawkeye is now an assassin, I believe. And so this is a thing. Okay, so I'm not familiar with the comics for this. So, like, I guess most people who saw this who are familiar with the comics were able to identify that immediately. Like, oh, he's Ronin. This is a thing for Hawkeye. I don't know if I'm just being weird, but, like, I assumed he was killing somebody who was bad.
So basically, the people who he's after, I believe, are the Yakuza, Japanese. They're basically the Japanese mafia, I think, what the Yakuza are. The guy has obviously lost his wife and children, who were completely innocent in every way. And so he's decided to take it upon himself to target people such as the Yakuza, the gangs, assassins, murderers, people who didn't deserve to come out of the snap.
Okay.
And that's kind of what he's doing. He's become a vigilante, essentially.
Yeah, so when Black Widow is kind of like, you know, you shouldn't be doing this, this makes me sad seeing you like this, I was kind of like, wait a minute, why? Because he's still, like, fighting crime. I mean, I guess maybe it's because he's actually killing people, and that's something that the Avengers, I guess, try not to do unless they really have to. Maybe that's why she's, like, upset by his, or... concern.
Well, I think, you know, we don't really know much about their past together. It's kind of hinted at, this whole kind of Budapest
thing. That they both were assassins at one point.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, she mentions in the first Avengers movie about the red in her ledger, and that she wants to wipe it out, and it's never really kind of talked about what they actually did together. But we can assume that they killed a lot of people, and that was something that was their past. And obviously, they both moved on. You know, she had become an Avenger, and he'd obviously done the same, and he'd started a family. And I guess I kind of liken it to, if you were addicted to something, you come off it, you become sober, and how disappointing it must be for you and obviously the people you love, for you to, you know,
go back on it.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of maybe the feeling that she's got for him. She feels bad for him. She wants to help him, and she wants to give him that hope that they now have, that maybe his family can come back. And he's obviously so overwhelmed with grief that he feels like these people need to suffer.
Mm-hmm.
Because these people aren't innocent. You know, they spend their lives like murdering other people. So to him, it's justice. It's a vigilante form of justice.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can speak about the ethics and the moralities of you know, is it ethically correct to kill a murderer? But I think that's obviously where he is. And she's just so upset because that was where they came from. That's not them now. And to see him regress back into that is obviously, I think that's why when she's in, like, in her office and she hears about him, she gets so upset because, you know, that's not what she wanted for him.
Yeah.
That's not the life that he should have. That's why she has to go and find him, and she has to bring him back, and she has to stop him, basically.
Yeah, so she's able to talk to him, and he agrees to come back. And I guess he agrees to come back knowing that I could possibly bring my family back. So, like, that's why I'm coming with you. And so this is when we get into Bruce Banner, I believe, and then Tony Stark discussing time travel and how it's going to work for them to go back. And so I'm trying to think of the most concise way that I think the film does it. Because Bruce Banner or Professor Hulk says it like, you know, if the past is the past, then your future isn't your future. Like, he says something and I'm like, I'm sorry, what? Like, for me, it took a second for me to understand that logic. I actually think maybe I might have understood it now, but basically he's trying to say, like, they determine that they can go back in time. They shouldn't interact with themselves, obviously, because they don't want to change anything. But when they're going back in time, it's actually maybe an alternate timeline.
Yeah.
So it's not, you can hear in my voice how scared I sound right now, because I'm literally like, I don't know the words that I'm saying. So, like, but yeah, so they go back. So basically that's the explanation, that they're going to go back in time. However, it's a different timeline. So that's why something like with Nebula, that confused me so much later on in the film. But I guess if I understand this time, how it is now, it makes more sense.
Yeah.
Do you have a different viewing of how their time travel works?
Do you know what? I've spent quite a lot of time, like, thinking about it and trying to obviously understand it in a way that I can understand it, because I'm not a scientist.
Yeah.
So, and actually not many of us are scientists.
Yeah.
But they obviously reference Back to the Future a few times, which I find absolutely hilarious, because they basically, like, I think Ant-Man says something like, so Back to the Future is bullshit.
Yeah.
So the type of time travel Back to the Future deals with is something called the grandfather paradox, which is basically that your past is your past, and if you go into the past, anything you do can affect the future. So it's a little bit like the butterfly effect.
Yes.
That, you know, a butterfly flaps its wings and can cause storms further down the line. Mm. And that's obviously something that's dealt with in Back to the Future Part One, this whole kind of grandfather paradox. And so in this version of time travel, so you basically got a complete, it's really difficult because everyone goes to Back to the Future when they think of time travel, even me, and I'm like,
I have seen Back to the Future, but I haven't seen it like a lot or recently, but that is my understanding of time travel. Absolutely.
Exactly. And that's literally everyone's understanding of time travel. And that's why I like that the movie references it, and they're like, oh, like Back to the Future. And Bruce is like, no,
yeah.
Like nothing like Back to the Future. But yeah, I mean, Back to the Future is that version of time travel is kind of complicated enough. But then in Back to the Future Part Two, they talk about a different version of time travel, which includes kind of alternate timelines. And that's kind of very similar to the time travel that this movie is referencing, except this movie is a lot more complicated.
Yeah.
So I'm actually going to reference another movie,
okay,
which I think deals with this really well and a really easy way to understand, which is actually another Gwyneth Paltrow movie called Sliding Doors.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen Sliding Doors.
I haven't seen Sliding Doors, but it funnily came up during our Kimmy Schmidt episode because there's a reference to Sliding Doors and they do a Sliding Doors episode. And so I actually had to look up Sliding Doors so I could understand the reference. But go ahead and explain.
So in that movie, Gwyneth Paltrow plays a character called Helen. And so essentially the movie kind of starts with her. She has like essentially a bad day at the office. And so she gets to the train station, and in one timeline of the movie, she catches the train, mm-hmm, and then separate. So basically when she catches the train, she gets home early from work and she catches her boyfriend cheating. So that kind of timeline, she breaks up with him and she starts a new life. I'm not going to go into it because it's
sure,
great movie,
yeah,
people should watch it. But yeah, so that timeline, she catches the train. But then in a different timeline, which splits off from that timeline, she misses the train. So she gets home late. She never catches her boyfriend. Her boyfriend's infidelities never kind of comes out. And so she carries on her life with him. And then so you've got these two individual timelines that Helen's life, and both are valid lives. Both contain valid choices. But that one, that simple change of missing or catching the train causes these two timelines to kind of diverge. And that's kind of the simplest way to describe it is,
yeah,
so you can have an event that causes a separate timeline, but that the events of that timeline are still valid in that timeline. And so that's why, because they mention in the movie about baby Hitler.
Oh yeah. Rhodes is like, you know, yeah, let's just go back to baby Thanos and kill him. And they're like, dude, like, it's a baby. He's like, yeah, but it's
Thanos.
Yeah.
I don't know why I said baby Hitler.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't mean Hitler, obviously. That's a completely different movie. I think because there is a theory, I think, called baby Hitler
I
or
think
something
you're
like
right.
That, which
yeah,
is
yeah,
the same thing. But yeah, obviously, baby Thanos. But yeah, so obviously that wouldn't work because in doing that, a separate timeline would be created in which baby Thanos would survive. And then, so, yeah, it's really complicated.
Yes. And during the film, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to let the film wash over me. I'm not going to. But then after the film, I was like, wait a minute, what? So it did take me a little bit to like digest everything regarding the time travel.
And the film kind of does play a little bit fast and loose with this concept of timelines, but it's also, I think it's going to be really interesting for the MCU going forward as well.
Oh, yeah,
because
absolutely.
If you've got multiple timelines and a multiverse, so to speak, you mm-hmm. know, we've just had Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse where you had all these different multiverse characters of Spider-Man, which were all versions of Spider-Man,
yeah,
and were all valid versions of Spider-Man, but lived in their own version of New York.
Yeah.
And this is exactly the same kind of principle.
Yeah.
So another really great example is just before we started recording, we were talking about our notes.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I said, oh, well, I've got my copy of the notes that you sent me. And you said, oh, well, I've got additional notes that I've added onto my notes.
Yeah.
So our notes are kind of a separate kind of timeline.
Yeah, they're a good example.
Yeah, it's a really good example. And yeah, so they're both valid notes, but they're completely different.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they've got the same source because they both came from you.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously my one is completely different to your one. But yeah, they would still exist in their own kind of note universe.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so, it's actually really interesting.
Yeah,
but carry
so
on.
If they successfully explain it or not, you know, I think they explain it in a way that it's not disturbing when you're watching the film. However, I do think many people are having this type of conversation after the film where they're like, wait a minute, but
yeah,
like, if they went back in time, how did, like, so basically another example of their time travel. So what they decide to do is go into teams, which, by the way, another clothing thing I really liked was when they were all wearing their, like, white jumpsuits to time travel. I just thought aesthetically that looked really cool.
It did look so
cool. Yeah, yeah. And so when they decide to go to different times. So I wrote a note of, I guess, four different times. They go to New York 2012. Which has the mind, space, and time zone or stone. And oh, this is a thing that I should kind of trail back on. They study on how they're going to do this. Like, how are they going to do this? And they discover while talking about it, I think Black Widow's like, oh, that means there's three stones in New York at one time. Like, let's go to that time because then we'll be able to get three stones at once. One thing that is said in this where I'm kind of confused, Nebula, each person is talking about where they can find the stone. Like, Thor is like, actually, it's not really a stone. The reality stone is inside Natalie Portman, and it's, you know, like, he's explaining it. And then Nebula's like, okay, the soul stone is on Vormir. And, you know, my dad, Thanos, went there with Gamora. And this is where I'm like, did she not warn them about Vormir? That it's, did you pick up on this at all? Because later on in the film, it kind of felt like they should have known they would have to give up a soul for a soul, because Nebula knew that was going to happen.
But I've been thinking about it, and I've not rewatched Infinity War sort of in the last couple of days, but I do agree that perhaps there's a possibility that she knew, in the sense that she knew that Thanos went with Gamora to Vormir to get the Soul Stone, and that Gamora didn't return.
Yeah.
But I don't think that she knew about the soul for a soul.
Possibly. That might be the case, because later when Nebula is speaking to old Nebula and old Gamora, and is like, old Nebula, you don't know what kind of monster he is. He's going to kill Gamora. So she's definitely aware that Thanos did it. But yes, you may be right. Maybe she just isn't aware that he did it in order to obtain the Soul Stone.
Yeah. You see, because in her mind, she knew that Gamora didn't come back. But maybe she thought that he killed Gamora to just basically stop her from telling people. Or, but so she knew that Gamora went with their father, but just never returned. So, but I don't think she knew about the soul for a soul. Can't say it, soul for a soul.
Okay.
Because that is obviously something that I don't think Thanos mentions that after.
That's true.
It's only something that is spoken by Red Skull when they actually visit him. So I don't think that Nebula would have intentionally sent
that was
Clint and Natasha there if she knew that one of them would have to die.
Okay, that like, was a thing. I don't think that so. I later was like, wait a minute, did Nebula, what is she like? Okay. So anyway, so basically they all take notes, they all decide to divide up in teams, and so Captain America, Iron Man, Ant-Man, and Hulk go to New York 2012. Thor and Rocket go to Asgard 2013. Hawkeye and Black Widow go to Vormir for the Soul Stone. And then Nebula and Rhodes go to Morag in 2014 for Power Stone. And so to speak a little bit more about the time travel, and then we can move forward. When they go to New York, Hulk, first off, it's funny because if I had to say like my favorite portion of the film, I think it would probably be New York 2012 when they go back and we see like Avengers, the movie, but from a different angle.
It's just amazing. I genuinely don't know how they did that.
Yeah, like, it was.
It's obviously a mix of the Avengers movie and stuff that they've obviously filmed again from different angles. And
it's very impressive.
It's so clever.
It's clever. It's impressive. And it's something that I think one complaint that I've heard from people who have more of an eye for this type of thing than I do is that they talk about the color schemes and the visual aspects of the film and how sometimes they feel a little muted. like all the films together feel muted or whatever.
Okay.
I've heard this complaint, yeah. And like with exception of like Guardians of the Galaxy and Black Panther and maybe Thor when we were in Asgard, like those worlds are bright or colorful, but everything else feels very gray. I don't have a great eye for that, so I'm going off of what other people say. However, what I will say though is I think I'm understanding why they do that, because it's probably easier to make all the films kind of look the same, like the same dull color, if the end result was for them to do something like this, where they would then be referencing it and want it to all feel the same and look the same. Because truly, it felt like, wow, did they film all this in 2012 when the film came out for Avengers and knew that they were going to... And clearly, they couldn't have. But, like, yeah. I think there was maybe, like, a strategic reason. Obviously, I'm not trying to excuse maybe they also just didn't think about the colors or whatever. But, like, I think that was intentional in order for them to do for in order for them to accomplish something like this, where they are able to like film it in a way that you feel like you're back in the 2012 film or the first Avengers.
Yeah.
So I definitely give them a lot of credit, and I think that's a lot of planning that takes place.
I think it's honestly I love things like this, and again, very similar to Back to the Future Part 2. I know I referenced that earlier, mm-hmm. but in that film, obviously, you've got scenes where you know. Marty is back in the 50s and he's seeing himself from the previous movie in the same scenes from the first movie. And it's a very similar, I mean, obviously this is miles more advanced than that movie, but, and it's just, it's honestly flawless.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen a 2012 Avenger movie so many times and I was kind of specifically looking for maybe that doesn't look right, and I couldn't pick anything up. It was
it all worked.
It felt seamless.
Yeah, and so we see Professor Hulk see his old Hulk self, and he's like really embarrassed, and then he's just like, "Oh my gosh!" And then they're like, "Okay, Hulk, you need to go get the time stone," and they're like, "But blend in, obviously." So he's like, "Oh, smash!" Because also Hulk in 2012. Couldn't really speak more than just saying like Hulk and maybe a few words, but now present day Hulk is able to speak, and so he's like trying to revert back to like smash crash, like he's just like very like like
he's very lackluster. Exactly. He's just like smash.
So I thought that was really funny, and then he goes to find the time stone and talks to the ancient one played by Tilda Swinton, and that is a visual that helped me a bit with the time stone, because she does her little like magical like thing in line in the air and whatever, and kind of explains like, yeah, but if you take my time stone, this creates an alternate path. So like, I was like, okay, that helps me a bit. So they have kind of a confrontation. She at first is very defensive, but at the end of the day, when he mentions Doctor Strange gave up the stone, and she's like, oh, he did? Okay, well then that means it was for a reason, so I'm willing
because
to give
this is obviously years before Stephen Strange is even Doctor Strange. But she obviously knew of him already, and she obviously knew that he was going to become Doctor Strange. And it's really interesting that obviously in that world the universe for Stephen Strange has already been planned out. And they she knows that he's going to be Doctor Strange and he's going to be the best of all of them, so you know, to know then that he gave the stone up willingly is all she needs to know to give Professor Hulk the stone, I think is really fascinating. But also the point that she mentions that you have to put them back also is fascinating.
So that whole thing happens between them. Captain America and Iron Man are trying to get the mind and space stone, I believe, which this is where I start to get a little confused. Is the Tesseract the mind stone? What is the what's the difference between the okay because I was kind of like, wait a minute, what? Okay, so they try to do that. It's funny, we see Loki and he's like making fun of Captain America. He's like, how are you guys around him all the time? Like, we kind of see like what happened after in Avengers after he was arrested that wasn't in the film, but we almost see like a behind the scenes version of what would have happened,
which is really great, because I was like, well, you know, when you've had a hard day at work and you finish and then you're kind of just having a chat with your colleagues, and, you know, it felt like that, like, oh, what are you doing after work?
And even though he's arrested, he's still like kind of like, you guys are around him all the time, like, you know, like, it's just like funny, like them joking about that stuff. And so what we get to see, which, okay, so I have, like, my notes are all over the place, but I have some, I have some things about, like, which characters I want to talk about. So I feel like this is a good portion for me to talk about Captain America. So Captain America is going to get, I forget which stone he's getting, but he, in the middle of doing this, he's off doing his own thing, and then Iron Man and Ant-Man are together. And so while he's doing his own thing, he's confronted with the moment that is in, I believe, Winter Soldier, which is the elevator scene, which was so awesome in that movie, right? Because it was like such a great moment.
Best.
And he is aware, like, oh, this is when I had to fuck shit up. Like, and I don't really want to cause attention now. So he says, Hail Hydra, which is that whole secret organization. And I've learned that this is possibly also a little reference to the comics, because there is, I guess, a version of the comics where he is part of Hydra. So it's a little bit of that, but it's also a nice, like, I know now that this is all I need to do. I don't need to do a whole thing for them not to try to beat me up. It is very interesting also because it's the same. It looks, I mean, I believe it's the same actors in the elevator. They all look the same.
Yeah, it is. Okay. It is the same. Yeah. It's honestly, it's so well done.
Yeah.
And that whole kind of Hail Hydra, really, it gave me chills.
Yeah.
Just to hear Captain America whisper Hail Hydra. And I mean, obviously, character-wise, like you say, super quick thinking to neutralize the situation so he doesn't have to kick a load of ass, in this elevator. But yeah, it is a very recent thing from the comic books where he essentially, Captain America is a double agent for Hydra.
Okay.
And I think it caused quite a lot of complaint that, you know, this American hero was all of a sudden actually, no, he's a double agent. But I thought that was great.
Yeah, I thought it was a great moment.
One of the best scenes.
And I was kind of like, oh, I'm glad he did this, but also, like, that fight scene in the elevator was so cool. So what can they possibly do? Like, oh, there's not going to be a fight scene. But then present day Captain America is confronted by 2012 Captain America. I loved the scene, because for me personally, I like Captain America, but I've never been like he's my favorite character. I always thought, especially in the earlier days, because he is kind of like a Boy Scout.
Yeah, he's very wholesome.
Yeah, I just didn't find him very interesting. But then when he is being confronted by the Boy Scout version, the old version of Captain America, and the present day, more experienced, still a Boy Scout, but also like maybe not as much as what he used to be, it's just a funny encounter. That fight is just funny because I think 2012 Captain America is like, I could do this all day. And then present day is like, I know. Like, this is who you are. I got it. Like, and it's just that whole encounter, I think, is great. The other character we need to talk about is Captain America's ass, because clearly that is a character of its own that we need to delve into, because this movie.
I'm just going to say. I mean, I know that, you know, the whole America's ass. I'm going to say, I disagree. That ass is the world.
Yeah,
ass.
Truly.
I mean,
so like for me,
that is one hell of a phenomenal ass.
So for me, like, I personally, like, whenever I talk about movies or like actors or whatever, I don't necessarily love talking about like their bodies. Even if I find them attractive, I might just be like, oh yeah, they're really attractive. But I don't really like to like talk about specific things. However, this film, like, even before they started talking about his butt, there's a scene, I think Captain America early on is just like washing his hands or something, and it's filmed where you could just see his butt, and he's like, and I'm just like, his butt is like amazing. Are we gonna talk about it? Like, it's just like, it's kind of hard to avoid, like, the way, especially the way that they're filming it, which I think maybe was intentional so that they could eventually bring up his butt multiple times in this film. And then when they do that line, I mean, I was cracking up. I was like, I guess it had to be said. Like, I mean, like, I thought that was, for me, with hearing Captain America say that and him being funny, because I don't think he gets many times to be funny.
No, but I just wanted to point out, you mentioned about the fight between sort of wholesome 2012 Steve and pessimistic current Steve. The thing I really liked was the difference in language. So obviously you mentioned about the, you know, I can do this all day. And he's like, yeah. Mm-hmm. But also the fact that when current Steve sees 2012 Steve, he says, like, you've got to be shitting me.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, this is a character who was, like, you know, telling people off for using bad language, you know, back in those days, and the whole kind of, you know, mind your language kind of thing. And he's just like, I don't give a crap now. The world's gone to shit.
Yeah.
I'm going to say swear words and, you know, whatever. I don't care.
Yeah.
And I think Chris Evans, I mean, I've mentioned before, just generally in everyday life, that I think he's superbly cast. I think there is no one who could play this like Chris Evans. And, I mean, I don't like to objectify, but I'm gonna.
I think the movie is letting us do this because they are making it a point in the film. That is a plot point. So, like, I mean, I don't feel like as weird or bad about talking about his butt because, yeah, it is a element in this film that we need to talk about.
we very much need to talk about this, and that's why.
Yeah.
I think that, honestly, I think the whole thing in sort of 2012, I think is outstanding. It's probably like, I mean, I know that I'm such a big fan of the original movie, and to see those scenes intertwined with each other, I just think is,
I
just think it's wonderful.
Yeah, it's so impressive. And again, like we mentioned earlier in our non-spoiler review, that it's obviously very satisfying for people who have seen all the films. Somebody who is seeing this film or just dabbles would probably not really understand why that was so significant or why it was so impressive. It was tremendously impressive. But basically what happens in 2012, Captain America, he gets everything fine. But because they make Hulk take the stairs, he accidentally crashes into Iron Man, who has the Tesseract, which then slides right in front of Loki. And Loki is like, is this happening? And then he just picks it up and just leaves. He's like, oh, okay, I'm just going to go. And so we don't see Loki again after that. When we were in Infinity War, Loki is killed by Thanos. But now, because we understand how this, or at least we're understanding it a bit, how the time travel stuff works, it seems like there is a timeline where Loki is alive and he has the Tesseract.
Yeah. Which makes sense because they've talked about a Loki TV show.
Yes, that is the assumption.
Which is going to be on soon.
Yes.
So kind of makes sense now why Loki's going to have his own show.
Yeah, because I was kind of like, how is Loki going to have a show? Like, I guess they'll just bring him back, but how? And I guess this is how they will do it. Then Captain America and Iron Man go to the 70s, I believe, to retrieve it again. And my thought process was, if they are retrieving it, doesn't that mean that Loki doesn't have it? But I guess in this, the way that time travel works in this film, that does not mean that. He has it in a different timeline.
Yeah. Okay. So Loki has the Tesseract in his timeline, and then this, so that's a different branch of the timeline now.
Yes.
And then him, them going back in time, back to the 70s is, yeah, it's kind of, I think it's the, I'm getting confused with the timelines now, but I think it's the same timeline, but yeah, so it's them in their current timeline, but just back.
Yes, again. They're back, and Loki obviously has branched off into a different thing.
Yes.
And so, that's what's happening there. We'll go back to the 70s in a second, but I just wanted to talk about the other group, or the other people. So in Asgard, it's Thor and Rocket, and they're getting the Reality Stone, which isn't really a stone, it's within Natalie Portman. Her character is Jane, I believe.
Yeah, so that was when in Thor the Dark World, she was infected by the ether.
Yes.
Which was this like glowing red, smoky thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's, but essentially what they say is that the ether is the reality stone.
Yes, so they have to extract it from her, which I was like, what are they going to do? We don't know. I mean, obviously Rocket stabbed her and extracted it from her, but we just never see it because it's all done off camera.
Yeah.
Which I thought, again, for me, this is an editing choice that, like, I wish I would have seen a little bit more, but I understand why they didn't do it, especially because I don't think Natalie Portman refilmed any scenes. So,
no, well, that's what I was going to say. I don't think she did, because I think the waking up scene, I think that was in Thor the Dark World anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's interesting because she was apparently at the premiere.
I saw that. That's why I thought, oh, maybe she did film something, but maybe she's just like, no, I'll go to the premiere, but I'm not like, like I'm not going to be in the movie anymore. I don't know.
There was a really big deal made out of the fact that she didn't really want to be involved in the MCU anymore.
I remember hearing something where someone asked her about that and she said something along the lines of, yeah, I don't think Jane is really part of their story going forward.
I think, sort of going from memory, I think that Thor the Dark World, she had obviously signed up for, she had like a contract, and I believe there was a director originally attached to Thor the Dark World, which I think was Patty Jenkins, who went on to do Wonder Woman.
Okay.
But Patty Jenkins dropped out of Thor the Dark World, and Natalie Portman wasn't very happy because she wanted Patty Jenkins.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of I think there was a bit of sour grapes from that experience. So I think she kind of felt like she had to do Thor the Dark World, but I don't think she particularly wanted to.
Sure. And so, yeah, we don't get to see actually how it's extracted, but we do see Thor talk to his mom because this is, I guess, moments before she's going to be killed or, I guess, killed in that movie. And it is a moment where, to speak on the reality of Thor's situation, he has lost he's lost all his family, he's lost his people, or at least a good portion of them, and to go back and see her is probably very difficult for him, and you could see that he's a little shaken by it, especially he was already shaken by like, oh, I don't want to do this, so he kind of makes Rocket go alone. And then he talks to his mom and it feels like a comforting feeling, even though he knows that she is about to die. It almost seems like she's like, just focus on you. Don't worry about me.
I think she knows, cause she knows that he's there and she knows that he's not her Thor. And I think she knows her fate, and that's why she, because she mentioned something about being raised by witches. That she has this, maybe she has this power of foresight, or so I think she knows what's going to happen, but she's kind of more invested in her son at that point, which I think is lovely because René Russo never really got a great deal to do in the Thor movies. And it's great to see her again as Frigga, and it's great to see the relationship because that was never really explored before.
Yeah.
I've never been in the situation where, you know, that to lose a parent.
Yeah.
But I can imagine that if you have lost a parent, that the only thing that you want to do is sit down and speak to them one last time.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, again, I was like tears streaming down my face.
Yeah.
You know, things like that always really hit me emotionally, and I thought that was lovely because sometimes all you need is a chat with your mum, you know, to help.
Yeah, no, it was a really nice moment. I think it helped Thor with what he's been going through, obviously what he's been experiencing, his grief. And so we have that moment in Asgard. Then we go to Vormir 2014. And this is the Soul Stone. So this is a scene that for me, again, because I think these two characters, Hawkeye and Black Widow, weren't necessarily the best developed characters throughout the MCU, the 22 films. For me, when they are confronted with one of you you basically one of you has to die. Like they're confronted, like a soul for a soul. You have to give up something that you love. And they realize that, you know, one of them has to sacrifice themselves. For me, it didn't hit me as emotionally as I think it should have. And I think maybe if the characters were a little bit more developed, maybe if I had more of a connection to them, specifically Black Widow, it would have hit me more. It was a complete shock, though. Like,
yeah.
Like I did not expect her to die. It was a little weird how it was filmed. Like, it was like, no, I'm going to kill myself. No, I'm going to do it. Like, it was a little like, I don't think it was supposed to be comical, but it did come off that way just a tiny bit. But yeah, when she dies, I was very shocked. How did you feel about that scene?
This is one of the things that I have an issue with, because I kind of, when I got out of the cinema, the one thing that kind of kept repeating on me was Black Widow.
Mm-hmm.
And what have they done to Black Widow? And why Black Widow? And, you know, all of these things. And I think it's because I have always felt like she, like I mentioned before, because she for a long time was the only kind of female point of reference.
Yeah.
You know, it always, I guess I kind of felt maybe a bit more of an affinity towards her, but I agree with you that they never really did that much with her. So, but for me, I always felt like she was kind of the entry point for me, you know, into these movies, into this universe. And as soon as you know they're going to Vormir, then you know that one of them is going to die. And I think at that point, I kind of figured that it would be Clint.
Me too. I did assume. I was like, because he even says, like, I have nothing else, so why wouldn't it be me? And I was like, yeah. Like, I assumed the same thing.
And the whole kind of, I kind of get what you mean when you say about it felt almost comical, the whole, you know, one of them runs and then the other one stops them and then the other one runs and then it did kind of feel a bit, and I do agree that the emotional gut punch that it tried to do just didn't quite land, even for me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I guess I kind of take it that obviously when she's dangling at the bottom and there's literally, he cannot do anything. That is it.
Yeah.
Like, she's basically like, you need to let me go because you're going to live and I'm going to die. And that's just the way it is. From an emotional point of view, I think a lot has been made of Natasha and Clint. And, you know, from the first Avengers movie, everyone kind of just thought that they had a bit of a thing and that they were going to get together.
That was the assumption, yeah.
And yeah, there was this big assumption about it and the fact that, you know, oh, they must love each other. And then obviously we realise in the second Avengers movie that no, Clint has a family, he has a wife, but they're obviously good friends.
Yeah.
And the thing that I liked about this was it, although it wasn't as emotional as it should have been for her, and I'll come into that in a little bit, but she really loves him.
Yeah.
She truly loves him. But it's not a romantic love, because platonic love can be just as powerful as romantic love.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he feels the same about her, I liked that a lot. And I liked that they actually sort of made that canon, that the love they have between them is pure. And it's pure enough to retrieve this stone. And I liked that. I didn't like the execution of it. And I didn't like the fact that Natasha had to die to prove that she had this love for Clint.
Yeah.
Because I do kind of have this issue with, you know, when women have to die to progress the plot, I think it's kind of a bit unnecessary.
Yeah, this is a thing that I'd like to talk about, especially once we just talk about MCU as a whole, once we're done talking about Endgame. But, like, I feel like, for some reason, when it comes to their female or women characters, they don't know what to do with them sometimes. And it felt like with Black Widow, that was a key example where she comes out like very like forceful in, I believe, Iron Man 2 when we first see her. And you're kind of like, okay.
But it's a very kind of sexually aggressive.
That's true, yes. It's
very overly sexual kind of.
But she's
do you see what I mean?
Yeah. Like, so they didn't really know what to do with her there, but at least they gave her something, right? She's a former assassin who might be using her sexuality also to help her advance, whatever. Okay. And then we didn't really get much else from her. We got a little bit here and there, but then I felt like in this film, we started to get more, like literally, like I mentioned earlier, I was like, okay, so she is now the lead of Avengers. She's taking charge. I feel like I'm getting to know her character a tiny bit more. And then even on this planet, when Red Skull, is that it? Yeah. Says like, oh, you're the daughter of Ivan or whoever her dad is. And she says like, I didn't even know who my dad was. Like expressing like, I don't know anything about my family. My family is the Avengers. This is who I'm connected to. It's like, oh yeah. Okay. That adds another layer of dimension to her character. Okay. And then she dies. And it's like, I just started to feel like I was getting to know her as a character. And now she's dead. And it was shocking because I wasn't expecting it, but it wasn't impactful emotionally at all.
Yeah. Yeah, and I do understand that. But the one thing that has really kind of irked me about this film, and this is, like I said before, I'm still giving it 5 stars regardless because of the whole experience. Yeah. But where was her memorial service?
Yeah, that is true.
You know, that she made a sacrifice just as much as Tony did. And although, you know, it is mentioned, oh, you know, we're really sad. Can we get her back? No, we can't because the Red Skull says we can't.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Bruce even says he's going to try and get her back and he, you know, they can't. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to see a memorial service or just a mention in Tony's memorial or something just to acknowledge what she did.
Yeah.
And there was nothing. And that's one of the things that I hope is in a deleted scene. I hope that they thought to have something for her.
I think they did it, but it felt so brief on that dock scene when they all come back from the time travel. And like they're like, oh, what? Thor's like, why are we even talking about this? We just bring her back. We just go back in time and bring her back. And then they explain like, we can't do that because that's how we obtained the stone. It was a soul for a soul and all this stuff. So like they do reflect on like, oh, she's gone. But yes, I agree. They don't really grieve or have like a memorial service or like something for her to honor her death.
It just feels really jarring because they make obviously such a big deal out of Tony.
Of course.
And I'm not trying to kind of take away from the sacrifice that he's given sort of through all of these movies. But, you know, Scarlett Johansson has been in these movies, not as long as Robert Downey Jr., but certainly the third longest, I think, after Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
So the actress has been in it the third longest. So the character's been in it the third longest. So she deserves it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a missed opportunity.
Definitely.
So the last place that they went during this whole time travel part is Morag in 2014, and that's with Nebula and Rhodes. And this is where I begin to have some of my time travel questions that I think we've answered already, but we'll get into it. They see Quill. And this is another funny moment where we see like the Guardians of the Galaxy moment of him like dancing. And the thing about Guardians of the Galaxy is that the music is such like a big thing. We love seeing them dance and sing and whatever. Always pick great songs. And then seeing it from a different perspective, he looks like a freaking idiot. And like it's just like you're only hearing like a couple of the lyrics here and there. Because you don't hear the song. So then you're just hearing like him singing it. He's not singing it particularly well. And
but that's kind of, you know, when I listen to music, like when I'm making dinner, I have the music on and I do exactly the same thing. So I sing certain lines and then I don't know this one, I'll sing this line instead. And you know, you don't hear it because the music's on. But if you turn that music off, you're literally just sort of mumbling a few incoherent lines. And I absolutely loved that. I thought
it was
hilarious.
So funny. It reminded me of like times, it doesn't really happen very often now, but like if you're listening to a song, like maybe you're listening to something on your phone and you're singing along, and then an alarm happens and it cuts the song off, but you're still singing and then you hear the reality of like, ooh, this is not as good as when the music is actually, you know, like that moment where you're like, oh, yikes. Like, yeah, so that was a great moment. And also it shows that because he's kind of joking around, he's easy to sneak up on. They were able to just like hit him immediately because he's so distracted by dancing around and whatever. So when they try to go back, Rhodes is able to go back, but Nebula has interference. We see, I believe this is 2014, right? Yeah, we see 2014 Nebula with Thanos and Gamora. And there's like some interference because Nebula is like part machine. So there's something going on, that some type of malfunction where they're able to see like what she can see, her memories and all that stuff. So Thanos now has the advantage a bit of being 2014 Thanos, but knowing what's going to happen in the future, that he will get the stones and that they are trying to stop him or go back in time, and that Nebula is part of it.
Yeah, because they're inferring that both Nebulas are basically on the same network.
Yes.
So they basically pick up the same information. So, yeah, so past Nebula knows the future from future Nebula because they're on the same network.
Yes.
Essentially.
And so basically after the time travel stuff, they come back, they briefly talk about Black Widow, and then they go into, okay, we have all the stones. Let's do this. Who's powerful enough to handle this? Hulk. Okay. They do it. And there's a moment where it's like, okay, did it work? I don't know. It seems very quiet. What's going on? And then that's when Ant-Man looks outside and sees like birds. And it seems like, oh, maybe it worked. And quickly, that's all destroyed because Thanos has now come into... I guess, okay, this is what I'm skipping. Nebula, past Nebula is able to come into present day, correct?
Yes. So past Nebula is essentially there pretending to be future Nebula.
Yes. And then while they're all like happy or trying to like do the stone stuff, she's messing with the time machine or the quantum realm machine and trying to make sure that they can bring Thanos and his people into 2019. During all that time, current day Nebula is talking to past Gamora, I believe. I believe this is happening.
Yep.
Yes. Okay. This is where it gets a little blurry.
It's starting to get very
It's getting a little blurry. But then she's like basically saying like, you need to work with me. He's going to turn on you. I know we've always fought, but you know, blah, blah, blah. Like basically trying to like convince past Gamora that he is not a good person and they need to leave him. And so, yeah, basically that moment, that brief moment when things seem to be okay, I was like, okay, where's it gonna go now? I was very curious, like, what would happen next? And it felt very jarring when the explosion happened, when Thanos comes in.
Yeah.
I was very shocked by that. I think I may have, like, jumped in my seat, like, because I was like, what? Like, and he blows up Avengers HQ.
Yeah, it very much comes out of nowhere.
Yeah,
it
feels very jarring. And so the building collapses, and... I believe Captain America, Iron Man, and Thor are able to get out fairly quickly. And they see Thanos. Thanos is like, tells Nebula, okay, go find the stones, whatever.
Yeah.
And he's just sitting there being cocky as fuck. Like, totally like, just like, oh, I know what's going to happen. So I'm just going to sit here in plain sight. I don't care. And this is where the three of them, Iron Man, Captain America, and Thor, like, let's get him, you know? But underneath all that rubble, I believe Hawkeye is running away from some of those mutant things. And then I'm trying to remember, like, where Ant-Man gets really small to try to... Oh, yeah, to save Hulk and I forget who else, maybe Rhodes, who are drowning.
I think Rocket.
And Rocket, yes, who are drowning. Because there's a whole thing because of the explosion. So, like, they're all kind of preoccupied. And then that's when this fight starts to happen. we have Captain America and Iron Man and Thor fighting, and something happens where they're fighting, and Captain America says, or Captain America gets the hammer, and Thor is like,
"Yeah, because
I knew it," or something, right?
Yeah, well, we didn't mention, did we, that when Thor went to Asgard, he actually gets the hammer.
Oh, yes.
So he gets Mjolnir in Asgard and brings Mjolnir back with him. Presumably because he thinks it would be a good weapon to have, I guess, because he's already got
the axe.
Is it Stormbreaker?
Oh, I do not know the names. I literally, like, have the hammer thing and the axe thing.
Okay, let's just go with the hammer and the axe.
But basically, the major events that happen, Captain America gets the hammer because he is worthy.
He's worthy.
Yes, I will admit, I was confused for a good 30 seconds on that, because I thought, because when Thor was like, "I knew it," I was like, "Oh, I knew it too. That's Loki." Like, I don't know why I thought Captain America was like, so I was so, and I was like, nope, I'm wrong. It's Captain America. He's worthy. Like, I just, so that's a me problem, I think, because I think the film didn't do anything for me to think that. I just was confused. But like, Captain America is fighting, and there is a moment, where you hear, I think Captain America hears, "On your left." And this is when all the portals start opening up, and so basically it worked when Hulk did it to like bring them back, but it seemed like it took a moment for everyone to come back. And to come back specifically at that location. And so that's when we see the flood of everyone coming back. We see everyone from Wakanda. We see Black Panther. We see Falcon and Bucky. And just like every single person who's been missing.
Literally everyone we've pretty much ever seen.
Yes.
In the whole of the MCU. Which was, I'm just going to say that I know that in America, I think that cinema screenings of movies are a lot more interactive. You know, I've been to the cinema once when I was in San Francisco, and I went to see Doctor Strange, actually.
Oh, okay.
When I was over there. And it was a very kind of, you know, there was a lot of clapping, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say, we don't do that
here. Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, when you go to the cinema here, it's quiet.
Huh.
Like, you'll hear maybe, you don't hear clapping. You never hear clapping. You never hear, like, jeers or whoops or, you just don't. That's a British thing. That's very British. But internally, we are, you know, we are celebrating.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very British thing. So I can, whilst I can't say that the whole of the cinema kind of erupted, you know, with all of these, like, because it was honestly one of the best scenes in the movie when all of those portals open and everyone comes through. Internally, we were all screaming.
Yeah.
Internally.
Well, I'll tell you here, in the US, everyone was freaking out in my theater. And my showing wasn't even that packed because I went earlier in the day to try to avoid crowds. But even my screening, people were like, "Whoa!" Like, it was definitely like a exciting moment when people came in or finally came back. I think everybody who was stuck in the building eventually gets out. They're all fighting. There is this moment, and I don't know if you can remember specifically who's involved, but I believe it is a moment like Captain Marvel finally comes back. And and I think she just like destroys his ship first.
Yeah, what I love about that is obviously his ship is firing down at that point. And then all of a sudden starts firing up.
Yes.
And you're like, why are they firing up? And then she just flies in, destroys the ship, you know, like that. She's just like, no messing.
Yeah.
Right, I'm here now. And I was like, that was like...
It was awesome.
Internally, obviously. Internally, I was, oh my God, this is amazing! But it was all incredible.
it was an awesome moment. There's also a moment where I believe it's Captain Marvel... Scarlet Witch, I think Okoye. I'm trying to remember. I forget what her name is. Is it Mantis, who's part of Guardians of the Galaxy?
When they all kind of came together.
Yes.
And, Oh, I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so it's like this moment where it's like thing. All these women, and it's like, yeah, this is great. I have heard some people like say like, oh, that's just fan service, whatever. It's like, yeah, good. Like, it's just like, yeah, I want yeah. this moment. Like, I want this to be even longer than a moment. I want, you know, like,
yeah.
I want this type of thing happening all the time. So I really enjoyed that moment. And what happens is basically like a hot potato of like, I have the gauntlet. Let's throw it over to Peter Parker, who has the gauntlet. Like, yeah. like it keeps kind of going from different people to get it away from him. But as we're winding down, I think Iron Man is like, could you just tell me if this is one of the times we win yeah. to Doctor Strange? And he's like, if I tell you, then it won't be the time. And so they're continuing to fight. And then eventually there's a moment Iron Man looks over to Doctor Strange, and Doctor Strange holds up his finger to say like one, like this is the one time. Yeah. And that's when he gets it. He puts on the gauntlet and snaps, and we see slowly all of Thanos's people go away. Thanos sits down, and then he disappears as well and turns into dust. And we're like, yeah, finally, like you're out of here, you know? But then we cut to Iron Man, who obviously that was such a powerful thing for him. It hurt Hulk, who is obviously bigger and
yeah.
stronger. But like Iron Man is a person who has a suit who is powerful. So like he yeah. is probably more vulnerable to something like that. And so we see at that yeah. moment him dying. And Peter Parker, like honestly, every time Peter Parker has had to talk to Iron Man recently has been like some of the most like upsetting but very touching moments, like in Infinity War when he is disappearing and he's like, I don't want to go, and he's like, I don't feel so good. Yeah. Like that's a very like touching moment. And then again here when he's like, hey, are you okay? Like he's like trying to make sure that he's yeah. okay. It's like,
I like that it's reversed, so it's yes. him talking to Tony, and it yeah, I that got me. It really got me.
Yeah, so that was difficult. Then Pepper Potts, oh, I forgot to mention Pepper Potts also joins in on the fight, because obviously she has a suit too from a previous film.
Yeah,
and
that's
it
right,
seems like
yeah.
he was working on it in this film. And so she approaches him, and she very quickly, she's like, you don't have to fight anymore, you can rest. Which is obviously her trying to put on a brave face, because I'm assuming that is tragic watching your loved one die in front of you. So she's yeah. trying to stay brave. So yeah, it's like, oh my God, he died. Okay. Like, I think a lot of people were expecting something to happen to Iron Man in this film.
Yeah, definitely.
But it still was very, powerful when it happened.
It was very, very emotional. And that, like I said earlier, with the emotional gut punch, you know, this scene just really delivered that gut punch.
Yeah.
The whole bit with like Peter Parker and with Pepper, and she, like you say, her telling Tony that he can rest.
Yes.
And
yeah.
I was a mess after that massive high of the battle and all of these amazing characters coming together and working together and them winning, you yeah. know, but to experience kind of this, the highest high and then the lowest low was, yeah, it was tough. It was hard. It was hard to watch.
Yeah, it was a lot. And so we then end that scene and go into, I believe, Tony's funeral. And this yeah. is another, I forgot to mention another part that was really nice during the battle was when Captain America says, Avengers assemble.
Oh yeah, we've
I know that. When they all are back, but yeah. like the way he says it, he like pauses and he doesn't say it like an uproarious like yeah, he kind of says it like let's do this, like but yeah. like it's a different tone than we're used to them saying it before. So I really enjoyed that moment too. I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, and that's basically what everyone's been waiting for pretty much since day
exactly.
one, I think, is that, because that is like the immortal line, you know, for going back to the comic
yeah.
books. And coincidentally, Avengers Assemble was the name of the movie when it came out here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it wasn't called The Avengers. I call it The Avengers. No one calls it Avengers
oh,
Assemble here.
Okay.
But there's like, there was a TV show in the 60s called The Avengers, which is completely unrelated. And for some strange reason, the marketing people thought, oh, we can't call it The Avengers because people might get confused with like a 60s spy show. And it's like, no, we won't get confused. We're not idiots. I know. Tell me about it. So yeah, here it was called Avengers Assemble. So yeah. And that whole kind of line of Avengers Assemble is, I think, something that everyone's been waiting for. Yeah. And yeah, that also got a very rousing internal. Yeah.
Yeah.
From everyone in our screen.
Yeah. No, it was a great moment. And then obviously all the things that followed. But to go back to the funeral. Yes. So we have the funeral and we see everyone kind of, we're panning through all the characters. What I thought was very interesting also, there's a moment where there's just like this lone teenager, like this boy. And yes. I was like, who the heck is that? And I later realized, oh, that's the kid from Iron Man 3 yeah. who was helping Iron Man. And I was like, oh, yeah. oh my gosh, they brought him back. And yeah, now he's like a teenager, not a little kid anymore.
And he's like really tall.
Yeah, he's really tall. Yeah. And so like, it's like, oh, okay. And so, yeah, that was a moment that for me, that was when I finally, I think, got a little bit more emotional. I like definitely teared up, but there were sniffles throughout the entire theater. I could tell it was really hitting everyone. And so then we go back to after the funeral and it's kind of like, okay, we need, now that we have the stones, we have to return them. And
yeah,
that's when I guess... oh gosh, you know what we forgot to mention? Sorry everyone that we're going out of order, but we're doing our best. We didn't mention the 70s. When they went back in time, they went into the 70s
oh, yeah.
because of the Tesseract. They yes. have to go back and get it. This is when Iron Man yeah. gets to see his father, who has been yeah. maybe more of like an intimidating figure in his life, and he's, you know, had this weird relationship with him, but then was able to actually talk to him about like fatherhood because his father is about to have him. And
yeah.
it seemed like that was a nice comforting moment for him that maybe made him feel more connected to his dad.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely took that from it.
Yeah. And then there's another moment with Captain America where he is, I think, doing, I forget exactly what he's doing, but he stumbles upon Agent Carter's office and sees yeah. that she has a picture of him, sees a picture of her. Yeah. Then he actually physically sees her and she doesn't see him, but it's very like, he doesn't get a moment where he gets to talk to her, obviously, because he would be revealing stuff. But it is very touching because he's like, obviously still in love with her.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's what happens in the 70s. Sorry.
Yeah. I just wanted to say, I know that obviously they couldn't see each other, but I was at that point, I was like willing her to turn around. I was like, please turn around, please turn yeah. around, please turn around. And obviously she didn't. And at that point I was like, oh my God, this just must be killing him
yeah.
because, you know, I absolutely love their love story. You know, since the first Avenger, which is highly underrated, I think, and I still say it to this day, it's highly underrated. I absolutely love Peggy Carter. And I also love the little nod to the Agent Carter TV show, because when Howard Stark is getting into his car, the guy, so he calls the guy Jarvis,
yeah, yeah.
who's like his driver. And that's the same guy who played Jarvis in the Agent Carter
oh,
TV
really?
Series.
Okay. I didn't watch the TV show, so I wasn't
yeah.
familiar with that.
But yeah, so I would, if anyone is interested in watching the Agent Carter TV show, I would absolutely recommend it because Hayley Atwell is phenomenal in it. And yeah, the guy who, that guy who's Jarvis is also in it playing Jarvis.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So yeah, that was a lovely nod to fans of the show Agent Carter.
So yeah, so that's the 70s yeah. that we forgot to mention. Anyway, back to the end yeah. of the film. Captain America, it has all the stones. He's going to go back in time. They keep referencing, like, he's going to go back in time, but it's only going to be 5 seconds for us. But he's going to be able to do everything he wants. I guess Bucky kind of gives him this look, like, yeah, I know what you're about to do.
I think Bucky
Bucky's like, I know what you're about to do. And then Captain America says goodbye to everyone, but kind of, I think he like hugs Bucky, and, or at least like there's an extra emphasis there because I think he knows he's not going to come back. And so he goes, he doesn't return. Hulk is kind of freaking out. I think Falcon's freaking out a bit, like, oh my gosh, what's happening? What's wrong? And then Bucky turns around and sees like, hey, look over there. And we see, Steve Rogers, Captain America, but significantly older. And he talks about like, you know, I decided to live a life. I've been doing all this stuff for everyone and I wanted to live a life. So I returned the stones, but then I went and had a family. And, yeah, it's really touching. It's very interesting because I think people also assumed, well, Captain America is going to die in this film. Right. And it's like, I mean, he's obviously,
it was going to be either one of them, wasn't it? That was the general implication.
And obviously he's significantly older and probably will die soon in this timeline. But like, he didn't just die in like battle or something. It was a nice ending for him because he got to live a full life.
You know, when you were just describing sort of the scene just then, I'm going to be honest, I was actually starting to get emotional again, because just remembering it is, honestly, this is the scene that just completely floored me. And I'm talking real, genuine tears streaming down the face, kind of. And I know that he doesn't mention that he's married to Peggy, because he says, you know, when Sam says about the ring, you know, and he says like, oh, do you want to tell me about her? And he's like,
kind of thing.
It's implied that it's Peggy, but it's not referenced. Yeah. And I've actually been kind of looking into this thing as to whether, you know, it the timeline would work with staying with Peggy and growing old with her. Because although the husband that Peggy, because obviously throughout the series of films, Peggy mentions she has a husband. But he's never named at all. So she mentions a husband and children.
Yeah.
And we see reference to a husband and children. So we see pictures of children, but we never...
Oh my gosh, you're right. Yeah.
The husband is never mentioned. And I think that the husband was always Steve.
Yeah, you're right.
It was just... She could never mention him, because by mentioning him, she would then affect the timeline by mentioning him. So although this whole time it's been assumed that she married, because she says, I think, I can't remember which movie, but she says something like, oh, the man that I married was rescued by Captain America or something along those lines. But that could still be Steve.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he does come back from... you know, from the Hydra base in the first Avenger, when he brings all of the troops back, he does also bring himself. So, you know, and that it could be referencing at any point. But so I think she knew not to mention him because she knew about the fact that he traveled back.
Yeah, I think actually that's a great point. Yeah.
So, and also, obviously, when he sees her in Winter Soldier and she's obviously in hospital because she has I think she has dementia at that point, and she basically keeps recognizing him as young Steve, and she says something like, oh, you've come back for me or something. I think that's just purely because, you know, the dementia, and she thinks that she's young, and she thinks that it's at that point that he's come back. I mean, you could read a lot.
Yeah, no, that's, I think that's a great way to look at it, because I didn't even remember that or think about it that deeply, but I think you're probably right. Like, yeah, it was him the whole time.
We know that obviously he went back for her, and you see them, obviously, their lovely dance at the end, because he finally got that dance.
Yeah, that was so sweet. And it was a very interesting ending. Real quickly, he gives the shield to Falcon. It was just such a nice ending to see things work out for him after it feels like, you know, we've been through all these movies and he's been lonely and he has loved her there. I think in the previous films, they also emphasized like the culture shock for him of obviously, you know, being frozen and not coming back until decades later and like seeing modern day versus his, what was his life. So like he's been through a lot of stuff. So it's like a nice satisfying ending. Like, oh, that's great that he got a happy ending and he got to be with the person he loved and had a family. And then it was also very nice when the credits started to come in and I think the original Avengers cast got like a special card that had like their hand or their cursive signature. And I at first I was like, wait, what's going on? Why are these actors getting a special thing? And I was like, oh, okay. Like they're all part of the original Avengers. But yeah, no, I like overall, like once the movie ended, I thought it was just like such a great experience. I was left with some feelings of things that I will want to talk to you about in a second. But as an experience, like it was tremendous. Like I can't imagine something like this being recreated. Obviously, something like this, there's artistic value. There's also financial because they've made so much money from all of this. These films, they're always successful. I don't think any of them have lost them money. Even one that's maybe not as popular, they've always made tons of money.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so like overall, but as far as to speak of the artistic value, yeah, it's just very interesting to see a story like this. I think they really did. I have read comic books in the past, but I haven't read anything recently. And I was more of a DC person when I read comics. But I think really these films have brought the comic book structure to film, which changes how film or how you approach film. Earlier when I was kind of talking to you about like, how am I going to review this? Am I going to review this as a film or an experience? I leaned towards experience because, you know, this is a very unique setting. We don't have many films like this. We get sequels all the time.
Exactly.
But we don't really get like something structured like this. Towards the end also, did you hear the hammer noise?
I did. I know what that is. So that noise is the noise that, do you remember in the first Iron Man movie when Tony Stark is making his first suit?
Yes.
In the cave?
Yeah.
And there's it's the repeated kind of hammer noise of him building the suit. That is what that noise is. So it's a lovely callback to where it all started.
Okay.
That's all that
Got
is.
Got it.
And I like that they did that instead of a normal end credit scene, because how could they do an end credit scene? How could they? They've done everything they need to do. This is, you know, Kevin Feige has basically called these 22 movies essentially the Infinity Saga. Yes. I'd argue that the earlier movies, they kind of weren't thinking of that at that point. But anyway, so 22 movies, they're calling it the Infinity Saga, started with Iron Man, and it ends with him building, you know, the noise of him building
Got
the suit.
It. Okay.
Which,
okay.
Yeah, it's perfect, really.
So what I was saying earlier regarding, like, bringing the comic book style to the screen is going to lead me to a brief conversation I wanted to have before we end talking about this film, which, by the way, we have probably talked about this film as long as the film is, so this is insane. let's just keep on moving.
Yeah, Sade had this crazy idea that this would only last an hour and a half, and I was like,
it'll be like really brief. We'll be able to do this, and that is not the case at all. but anyway, so like, I think the MCU films have brought a comic book sensibility to films, right? I've heard a lot of critiques about these films feeling very episodic. They feel like TV, which I don't know if that's necessarily like a dig or not, but they're just trying to say like, this doesn't feel like a film. It feels like TV, which I do agree with, kind of. It does feel like chapters and not necessarily like a film experience 100%. However, I think this just makes it a unique film experience for us in overall after watching these 22 films. So when I mentioned earlier, you know, the directors are from TV, I think that helped them tell this story and bring the comic book to the big screen. There are some things that I would like to see going forward. So I wanted to kind of just have a brief conversation about your expectations after Endgame regarding like the MCU. So mm-hmm. I'll start. One thing for me that I'd like to see is just more women in general. I think we talked about this when we were talking about Scarlett Johansson's character, Black Widow, and how like she was the only woman for a while, and it didn't really feel like mm-hmm. she was. They didn't really give her a lot, and now that it's ending, you know, and she's dead, it's kind of like, well, that kind of sucks. Like, we only got to know her a little bit. So I think any piece of work, media, TV, movie, whatever, I think there should always be a large number of men and women so that they're not the token person and have exactly. to have the weight yeah. of being everything to everyone. I hope that going forward, and it seems like with Captain Marvel, they're beginning that. And also, we forgot to mention that Thor basically tells Valkyrie, take over Asgard. You're going to do a great job. And he goes off with the Guardians of the Galaxy. So, yeah. like, hopefully we can see Valkyrie as being, I don't know, in charge of that community and what that means. And going forward, and new characters in the future, I hope we just see more women, because I think in these first 22 films, it's crazy that I'm saying first 22 films because I'm just now assuming this is gonna be on forever, but like I hope that we just that they improve that, and I hope that they also, when they bring characters in here, I wanted to briefly mention like sexuality and queerness, because there is a character during the grief session who I think is played by Joe Russo, the director, who mm-hmm. is talking about, oh, I was on a date, and you find out that he was on a date with a man. And there's been some conversation about like, some people are like, oh, see, look, they have a queer character. And it's like, yeah, but first off, it was so brief. Secondly, I think yeah. people's concern isn't, are there queer people walking amongst the superheroes? They want to see queer superheroes. And I would love yeah. to see that as well, like going forward. Like, I think one thing that I didn't love with Captain America's story is that they tried to make him romantically linked at one point with Agent Carter's grand niece. I believe.
Yeah. That's horrible.
Yeah. And it may have not been to try to, oh, he's not gay, look, but it felt that way because there was a lot of shipping of Captain America with Bucky. Like, everyone's like, oh, well, they're yeah. in love, obviously. Like, you know, like, and then in reaction, it felt like the reaction was, let's have him hook up with Agent Carter's grandniece.
Yeah, that just never worked. It never, ever worked. That's probably one of the very few missteps.
Yeah.
I think that the universe has actually taken. I think that, yeah, that was yeah. not good. That was not a good time for Captain
exactly.
America.
Exactly. And so, like, for me, I hope that, one, not all of the superhero characters have to have a romantic partner, first off. I'm okay with them not being romantically linked to anyone. And two,
which Captain Marvel was fantastic
exactly.
at. Not only was she a woman, she also didn't have a romantic subplot with anyone.
Exactly.
You know, and that worked fantastically for that movie. So.
Yeah, so like I definitely think like you can have these superhero characters and they don't need to be romantically linked to anyone. But I also think some of them can be. I'm not trying to say I don't want that either. But I also hope that we see the scope open up finally and have queer characters in these films and not just a like 10-second, you know, grieving person implying that they're mm. queer. I would like to see like a superhero who is queer and falling in love with another person. So like that would be great to see in these films going forward. Is there anything that you would like to see going forward in this universe?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously just kind of really reiterating what you've already said. Mm. I mean, you know, in these 22 movies, we've kind of had 1.5 female-led, female-titled
yeah,
movies.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, but that's not acceptable. It's just not. You know, women make up essentially 50% of this planet. You know, we deserve to have representation in these
yeah.
movies. And I think Ant-Man and the Wasp was a great start, because I think the Wasp is a great character. And I give full credit to Evangeline Lilly for that. I think she's mm-hmm. great. And then Captain Marvel came along and it kind of stuck two fingers up at all of the haters, yeah. and it was a great fun movie, and it made over $1 billion. So, you know, I think we're in a fortunate position now that Marvel are going to be looking to invest more in female-led movies. And I'm pretty certain we're going to see more of Cassie Lang. I think we're definitely going to see Monica Rambeau.
She was in Captain Marvel, correct?
Yeah, so, yeah, so sorry. She was the child of Maria Rambeau. So she's, I think, 11 in that movie. She's going to be an adult woman now of, you know, mid-30s. So I think we're going to see Monica Rambeau at some point soon. And I think that, you know, just taking a line from the movie, you know, obviously one of the things that Iron Man says to his daughter is, "I love you 3000, which gets me. And, you know, do I want to see more female-led movies? Yes, 3000%. I want to see, you know, but I also want to see, you know, I think with the MCU has made great strides in its diversity of its cast. I mean, if you look at phase one of the MCU, it was mainly white dudes.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that is something that they have worked on, and I hope they keep going forward with it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think they have done well in that. I think that, you know, we are looking at a more diverse cast. I think obviously the inclusion of Wakanda into the MCU has helped tremendously with that. There are a large population of LGBTQ people who are not represented at all. And again, you know, it's not acceptable. It's just not, you know. I think that Tessa Thompson said that they filmed some scenes for Valkyrie where she was queer. Yes. And they obviously cut those scenes. And I still don't know to this day why, because I kind of feel like she came across as, you know, a character who was pretty much open to anything. Sure. I kind of would have liked to see that facet of her character. I know that they're, like you say, they had quite a lot of fanships for Stephen Bucky. I know that there's also been quite a lot of shipping of Carol and Maria Rambeau, I think. It's quite a popular ship. And also Captain Marvel and Valkyrie is now on Twitter.
Yeah, I see really like pretty artwork of that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I would be so down for that, because I just think that having a character like Captain Marvel be queer and a woman,
that'd be awesome.
It would be awesome.
I hope that's something that they are genuinely going to do, rather than do this stuff where I feel like sometimes it might be considered like queer baiting, where it's almost like, well, maybe, and it's like, no, just take that extra step and do it. The other thing that I'd like to see, which made me think about this more with Thor's character, is that I would like to see like different size of people and like shapes and like people who are overweight. I think there is, I don't know the name of this comic book, but I think there's like a plus size female comic superhero. And like, that would be cool to see, because like, obviously now it can't be like, if somebody's going to come at me and be like, well, you can't be out of shape and be a superhero, it's like, well, Thor did it, so let's get like everyone, you know, like if you have superpowers, you could be any shape, like it doesn't matter. Like, I would like to see that. I would like to just see like different things happening in the future, period, you know, like.
And as well, I kind of feel like when people are like, oh, well, you know, you couldn't be like a larger person and have superpowers, I'm like, well, hang on a second. This is a fictional universe.
Exactly. That's my thing. It could be anything. Like, so like, why limit yourself?
Exactly. And, you know, I think that there's quite a lot of plus size, you know, people in the fitness industry. I know of a particular plus size yoga instructor who is very popular on Instagram, and she's amazing. The things she can do with her body, and like, it's just incredible what the human body can do. And just because she's plus sized, it doesn't make her any less agile or flexible. I would like to see different body types, definitely, but I don't want it to kind of be a point of a joke.
Oh, yeah,
like, oh,
absolutely.
Look at that.
Yeah, I don't want that. I just want
I
different
don't want
body
them to
types.
Go down that
yeah.
Route. Yeah. I want them to kind of take it seriously and you know, not just have it be the butt of a joke.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my only thing about it is I want them to do it, but I want them to be respectful of you know, plus sized people
yeah.
at the same
yeah.
time. Just as if, you know, you have a queer person, you're respectful of the queer community.
Exactly. I hope that people who have been like on the fence about like, oh, I don't know, I don't really watch like superhero stuff. I hope that they're like, oh, you know what? I'll give it a chance because it doesn't seem like these films are going anywhere. Like they're going to continue making these films. I think there's been some conversation about possible like superhero fatigue, which at times I do feel sometimes like it feels like there's a superhero film coming out every week, you know, like at least that's
yeah.
the feeling.
Yeah.
And some of them are not as successful. Real quickly, like obviously the landscape of the film industry has changed, or at least the goal has changed a lot with these MCU films because they've made so much money. People have tried to recreate that, but it doesn't seem like anyone has been successful. So something like DC, it seems like they were trying to do that model, and now they're just going to release their superhero films individually, like how they used to,
yeah.
which is great. I just hope that people don't take the success of MCU and think this is how everything needs to be done, because it is great. These are huge, big movies, but I don't need every single film to be like this, you know?
Yeah, no, I think that what Marvel Studios has done is unique.
Yes.
I don't think it's ever going to be fully replicated from the start. And I think the main reason why it's unique is because, you know, when DC decided they wanted a universe,
mm-hmm.
it was obviously based on what Marvel had already done. And similarly with Universal, with their attempt on this
Dark
Universe.
The Dark Universe was painful. Yeah, that was bad.
Yeah. And that was because they obviously wanted to emulate the success. But the thing is the Marvel Studios didn't start out to have
exactly,
a universe.
Exactly.
They started out with two movies, you know, with Iron Man and Incredible
yeah.
Hulk. There wasn't a vision of this massive universe. It's happened organically.
Yeah.
And they
played
you can't
the long game.
That
they played the long game and it
exactly.
worked. And it seems like obviously they're, you know, obviously swimming in the rewards of pacing it in that way. But other people, I think, are like, yeah, Dark Universe, we'll do this. I saw that Mummy movie and it is.
Oh God,
it
horrendous.
Is bad, and it makes me very angry. and that Mummy movie was very like calculating. You could see how they're like, this is going to connect to this world, and like it was very clumsy in how they were attempting to expand their universe. Yeah, I think this is obviously we could keep talking about this for 3 more hours because like
oh so long.
Yeah, we have been talking about this
so much to talk about. Do you know what? I feel like there's so much we haven't said about Endgame, and I feel like people are going to say, why didn't you talk about this?
I know, I know. Yeah. I also was like, oh, maybe we could talk about upcoming films. That's going to take too long. We just need to, like,
it's
yeah. So, like, if anybody's like, hey, I listened to this whole thing and you didn't mention this, please, like, reach out to me and stuff, and, like, we could talk about it online. But we're going to wrap this up. Thank you so, so much for doing it. I'm so glad I had you on to go over this because it was like you said, such a big movie. There's so much to talk about. Can you let everyone know where they can find your podcast and where they can connect with you on social media?
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you so much for having me on because, you know, we've been connected on social media for quite
yes.
a while. And you were really the first person that I kind of started talking to about doing a
same.
Podcast in
yeah,
the first place.
You were the same.
And so it feels like it feels like, you know, this is our kind of superhero moment. This is our big
yeah.
teamwork moment. So yeah, this is great. But yeah, so my podcast is Verbal Diorama. So I call it a show and tell show about movies. So I like to basically look at the history and legacy of movies you know and movies you don't. I've not been doing it for very long, but I've kind of started to build up I think they're quite good episodes, but I guess someone will tell me otherwise. You can basically find Verbal Diorama on, well, pretty much any app you
okay.
choose. I'm obviously on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, And or, you know, basically wherever you get your podcast app.
Nice. Do you have a website or anything, or can they just go directly to their podcast app?
Do you know what? I do have a website now because I actually built it.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So 2 days ago. So my new website is just verbaldiorama.com.
Okay, perfect.
But there's a little podcast radio player on there, which you can basically listen to episodes on. And like social media is really easy because I managed to choose a name for my podcast that didn't already exist. So All of the handles are just at Verbal Diorama. And yeah, I'm happy to talk about anything. Obviously, I love the MCU. I'm a big fan. That's why I'm here.
Yeah.
I love all sorts of movies. So yeah, if anyone wants to find me, follow me, subscribe, review anything, just please do something.
Absolutely. I highly recommend it. I've talked about your podcast before on our show. And
yeah, you have. I'm so grateful. Honestly.
Yeah, no,
so
I love it. I like the way you go in depth on everything is just like perfect. It's exactly like what I always look for in a TV and film podcast. So I highly recommend it. All right. Well, let's go on to our next topic. All right. So this is a little bonus portion of our Avengers review. Since Kyle wasn't able to join us, he wanted to say a few things about the film.
So I just wanted to say, first of all, that, you know, we saw it separately because I was out of town and I saw it by myself. But I thought it was amazing. I loved the movie. And as far as a rating, I would give it a 5 out of 5. I felt like Infinity War was like pretty good, but this one was just really awesome. I thought the action was great. I thought the way they handled the storytelling was really great. I thought it was really nice how they were able to take a look back at all the old movies by doing the time travel aspect. And so it kind of was like a really great epic ending to the whole story that I thought was tied together really well. So overall, I just really loved the movie. As far as I had some questions, as far as where Loki went, which probably is not, going to be answered right now, but
yeah, that's something that Em and I discussed as well. And
yeah,
you may not be aware of this, but there is a Disney Plus show about Loki, so the assumption is it's going to be him traveling different dimensions or timelines with the Tesseract. So,
Interesting. Yeah, so I thought that was interesting where you pretty much very easily forget that he took that and disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
But then you're like, oh, that splits the time. Interesting. Okay. How did Captain America get the powers? That was kind of odd.
So I think it's just that it's showing that he's worthy. I forget which film referenced it where he was able to kind of move it. Yeah. Previously. So I don't even think that he got the powers. I just think that he became 100% noble and worthy of the hammer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems odd. Because then also he could summon the lightning and stuff. And I was like, that took Thor forever to be able to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
Just a little odd.
Okay.
And other little thing was, when Captain America went back and like lived his life, was he still saving people and being Captain America at all?
I think so, but maybe not. That's something that they don't really say. It kind of feels like his last heroic act, at least, was returning the stones, and then he lived his life.
Yeah, I wonder if he was just like, now I'm just going to sit at home and let people die and stuff.
I mean, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, so interesting. But yeah, I thought it was very well done. I definitely want to see it again. There was a lot going on, and it makes me actually want to go back and watch all of the movies over again so I can like really get all the detail and stuff. So
yeah, that makes sense because I think the film references all of the movies as well. Yeah. So that definitely makes sense why you would be like, oh, I want to watch it over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really good.
All right, let's go on to our next topic. All right, so now we wanted to briefly discuss episode 3 of season 8 of Game of Thrones, The Battle of Winterfell. So we just watched the episode, and we were very tense because I think this episode was built up to be, like, the big battle. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this is going to contain spoilers. The way it ends, though, it kind of seems like, no, this is just one of the big battles. Because,
well, no, this is the big battle.
Yes, this is the big battle, right?
Yeah.
But the Cersei thing kind of feels like that's going to be a big battle, too.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But, I mean, that's a totally different thing.
Oh,
this was the big battle.
I just thought, yes, that's true. I just thought, like, okay, they're probably going to be fighting him for, like, 3 episodes, right? Like, I just didn't think it'd be wrapped up.
Yeah, no, I didn't think it was going to be one.
So, for me, overall, just to give my quick review of the episode, it was scary. There were times
the tension was more scary, I think, than it actually was. We were like, oh, man, somebody's going to pop out. But yeah. It was more like they just kind of, like, busted down the door.
I don't know. It felt like a horror film to me. There were times, especially because the White Walkers, like, run way too fast. It feels like they should be slower.
Please, someone reach out to us and explain the difference between White Walkers and whites with a W-I-G-H-T.
I think the difference might be the White Walkers are the ones that look like him, like the Night King or whatever.
Hmm.
And then the undead might be the whites that are, like, controlled by him. That's what I think. But yes, if someone knows the specifics, let us know. But
that was very surprising when I was like, White Walkers. Oh, it's like the color white. And then it's like, wait, what's this W-I-G-H-T?
Yeah.
And then, there's both? Like, what?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. But anyway, so like, yeah, the part that was obviously terrifying was when, like, for instance, when Jon is about to, like, thinks he can come up on to the Night King, which is like, John, why are you stupid? But then the Night King is so freaking cocky and it just turns around and makes all the dead, like, who were obviously John's men and stuff, come back to life.
Yeah.
That was terrifying. Obviously, there were great moments,
the best moment of the episode was the little girl.
Yes, that's who I was going to say. So the little girl, I think
Lady Mormont.
Okay, is it Bella Ramsey? Yeah.
Bella Ramsey's the actress's name.
Oh, okay, yes.
Yeah,
okay.
I got confused by that because like, Ramsey is also
I was like, huh? Okay. It was a great moment for her, obviously, because she got to fight. We got to see her fight. And then it was really terrifying because I was like, oh my God, this is awful. She's so tiny. That thing is enormous, whatever, you know, like it's going
crushing
to
her.
Crush
it
her.
It just like smacked her and it was like insane.
Yeah.
And you see like when the giant comes in, you're like, oh my God, what are they going to do now? And then she single-handedly takes him down. And it was just like, what?
That was pretty awesome. And I wasn't expecting that. And it was nice because I thought, oh, he's going to crush her and she's going to die horribly. That's how this episode's
going to...
just
like, oh my God.
And instead, she does die, but she's at least able to take him out. And that was good. Another moment that was great was seeing Arya actually get to fight, like, throughout the episode. I will say that her coming up onto the Night King felt like, how was she able to run up on him? Like, I still don't understand
the
logistics.
She was, like, extremely sneaky, training.
He was covered. It just, I don't know. I guess I wish I saw some of that laid out. But yes, obviously it was a nice moment.
I mean, he caught her, so that was pretty insane.
Yeah, that was terrifying.
I was just like, oh my God.
Bran was getting on my nerves.
But so the dropping the knife thing,
that's
a move from something.
I don't know.
You didn't remember?
I can't remember, but maybe it is from another thing. But I feel like, yes, we have seen that before, maybe in a different movie. But I don't know if we've seen it before in this show. I don't know. But yeah, that was a great moment. Also, when she kills one of the White Walkers in that like library or wherever they were, where it looked like, oh my God, did it get her?
And then
instead she smartly stabs it like in the mouth so it doesn't make noise as it's dying.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah, that was crazy and scary. I mean, there were a few people who died besides Lyanna Mormont, Dolorius Edd, who I think he was protecting Sam or at least helping Sam, and then he died. Beric Dondarrion, who is that? The Lightning Lord has died many times. Oh, the guy with the eye patch?
Yeah, the eye patch guy.
Okay, yeah, that was intense because at one point he's basically using his body as a shield to keep them away from Arya.
Mm-hmm.
So that
was crazy.
Insane. And then Theon died, which, like, he knew he was going to die. So, yeah. Like, it was just like, okay, all right. The Night King died, which, again, I was not expecting.
Yeah, not in this episode.
Who is Jorha or Horha Mormont?
Jorga.
Jorah?
Jorah.
Yeah, who's Jorah?
He's the one who protects Daenerys.
Oh, yeah. And Daenerys is wearing the most inconvenient coat that is, she can't even lift her arms up. You could see that it's so bulky that
it was cold up there.
I know, but let's have some movement.
I mean, and she would have died up there.
It was very interesting to see, because I think if you asked me who was like a very like tough person who like, oh, you don't want to get in their way, I would have probably said Dany. And then I was like, wait a minute. She really is only tough when she has her dragons. She doesn't know how to fight. So, like, that doesn't make her less tough. But I realized at that moment, I was like, oh, yeah, no. She needs someone to help her if she doesn't have her dragons.
I mean, she did prove it. I remember somebody being like, psh, what are you going to do? But I think what she did was just, like, walk into fire again or something like that.
Right? Yeah. I'm not trying to imply that she's not tough. I just... Yeah, I know. That was a reality check for me when I was like, oh, yeah, if she's not a dragon, she's kind of fucked. And...
Hey, does that mean that Jon Snow can just walk through fire, too?
Maybe. I guess we'll see what happens there.
That hasn't happened before, right?
No. Yeah. And so, yeah, he died. Melisandre, the red bitch. Lady. Like, truly, like, okay, thanks for helping us out, lighting up those swords. That was cool. But otherwise, it's just like, why are you here? And also, like, at one point, she was supposed to help, like, with the barrier.
Yeah.
And she's just, like, doing the slowest
walk.
And it's like, girl, run.
I know. We're all it's frantic. Like, at least jog. Like, yeah, what is your like, problem?
She was getting on my nerves. When she died, I still don't understand the significance. I'm probably going to have to read up on that. Like, but it's like, okay, good. Bye.
Yeah.
Go away.
That was kind of, I would have liked any other way to end the episode.
Sure.
Because it was like, that epic episode, and then the end of just her dying. Just like,
maybe if we actually knew the significance, really, but like when that one guy who like knows her, like looked at her because he like knows what she's done, he's probably like, bitch, why are you here? Like, it's like awful.
And he said, let her in.
And it's just like, well, whatever. Sansa and
Tyrion,
that was a nice moment of them being able to talk.
But we didn't get to see them fight at all. So
because they didn't
have to
at that point.
Well, I wonder if they did at all.
I don't know.
They may have a little bit.
But I think it's Missandei.
Who? Oh,
Grey Worm and the girl.
Oh, yeah,
with,
I don't know her.
I think, whatever her name is, sorry that I'm forgetting now. But when Sansa's like, oh, yeah, I wouldn't have worked out with us because you like the dragon woman or whatever she said. And then Missandei was like, yeah, if it wasn't for her, you would already be dead. And then left the room. And I was like, yes. Like, I mean, I understand everyone's viewpoint on that. But it was nice that she got to, like, speak up and say something. Like, shut the fuck up. Like, you know? Like, I'm trying to think of other great moments. I mean, it was like a really, I mean, I think this was one of the 80-minute episodes. It was really tense. I felt tense for, especially at the very beginning, because a lot of the scenes you couldn't see what was happening. Like, like, especially
towards
the
beginning, I think I was a little more tense.
Yes.
I wasn't crazy tense throughout the thing, but I was on guard a few times.
Well,
just like, something's going to pop out. But they didn't rely on that, which I liked.
Yeah, but it did feel like a horror film when they would show basically the tons of White Walkers running up against them. And they were basically like jumping over each other and using their bodies to like help each other.
Dampen
like,
the fire.
Yeah,
oh my God,
that
was
terrifying.
I was like, oh, at first I was like, okay, so they're just mass committing suicide. And I was like, oh, no. Oh, my God.
Yeah. So I am very curious what's going to happen next week with Cersei. Because Cersei's plan was just like, well, let the White Walkers get them and I'm good.
Yeah.
And but now it's like,
well,
no.
I mean, she was preparing a whole army. So
yeah,
she
that's
figured
true.
They may be alive. But
I just was
they
not...
also lost a lot of people. So I wonder how much they actually have.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. And I am very curious what's still going to happen with Dany and Jon, because I feel like
Yeah, that's still unresolved.
Danny and John, there was some tension there that I felt like was possibly...
Was there in the episode?
At the
in
beginning, this episode? Yes, at the beginning when she sees the Dothraki die and she is like, I need to go. And he's like, no, wait. And she's like, no, the undead are here. And like, so basically they're already arguing there because she's not staying to plan.
I mean, I feel like that would have been like that either way.
I'm just saying there's some tension there. Then when they were like... just really uncoordinated and like crash their dragons into each other. Like that thing, like, I think it's just going to be like,
I mean, that was because of the storm.
All I'm saying is something is going to happen between the two of them that is not going to end well for one of them. I don't know who.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, I'm sure, but I don't think that was just,
that was
the
part
episode
that was a little annoying when Danny was like, I'm going to bring my dragon down to the ground and look over. And then all those,
what the heck? Why are you sitting on the ground with the dragon for like multiple minutes?
Never. Yeah, that was annoying.
That was dumb.
Anyway, but the episode was great. It was very tense. I do think it's convenient that like all our true main characters didn't really die. I was expecting like all, I was like Brienne and like, I just thought all of them were going to die and they didn't.
Did you see what's his name? The guy who was part of the Free Folk? I couldn't tell where he was.
The redhead?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He was there. He's alive, too.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, he wasn't in this list that you found.
Yeah. No, he didn't die. Dead. Yeah. He was there fighting. You saw him a lot towards the beginning and a little bit towards the end. But
yeah,
he was fine.
But I felt like at some point I just lost track of him.
I mean, there are so many people.
Yeah. That's something that, like, seeing the Avengers Endgame and then this, that I feel like Avengers Endgame did a really good job of keeping track of everyone in all the huge battles and stuff. And I think this show did a pretty good job of that, but I felt like it could have been better.
I mean, this show had the disadvantage of having like multiple locations. I mean, they're all at Winterfell, but it's like inside Winterfell, outside, towards the forest area.
Well, I mostly mean the not indoors things.
Okay,
the indoors things is a little
that
more
was very
obvious,
complicated,
but the other ones is just like, who's where?
Yeah. No, but it was a good episode. Yeah, good. But I just think, like, that's interesting that our, like, main characters that we thought were going to die, like, didn't die. And now, great, they're going to die next week. Like, what's happening?
Yeah, I mean, there's the next big battle, so they wanted to save him for that, I guess.
Yeah. Next week's going to be insane, too. All right, well...
I don't know. I feel like next week will die down a bit because they have to get into
I think
it.
Next week is another 80-minute episode. So
is
I don't.
It?
Yeah. Mm. I don't know. We'll see, but...
Interesting.
We may review that episode as well after we watch it. So we might be doing each episode as it goes because it seems like they're going to be pretty big episodes. But all right, let's end the show. Thank you so much for listening. Please make sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and also make sure to subscribe. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Offscreen Babble. And if you have any feedback or suggestions, please email us at offscreenbabble@gmail.com. All right. Bye.
Bye.